What is up, everyone? This is episode 245. In this episode, I must warn you right up front. This is the deepest, longest, most intense dive into pro wrestling we've ever done. This whole episode, well, about an hour and a half of it, is centered around AEW's last pay-per-view, which was called Full Gear. Something Jay and I watched together with his son, Will, and something Tom watched on his own. And unfortunately, Jay couldn't join us, but Tom and I sat down and talked about the whole thing. So if that's not your bag, thank you for letting down. Like Tom says in the episode, thank you for at least downloading and getting to this point, and just skip on past next week's episode, which will be about Ghostbusters, the new Ghostbusters, and it'll be spoiler-filled. So there's your another warning. That's all I got, though. Other than that, we had fun doing this. Tom and I somehow drank a good amount of beers in a shorter period of time while doing this episode. Hopefully it was, if you are a wrestling fan, you at least enjoy it, and you can hear it, no matter what, right after the bomb, which is now. We're looking at doing a soccer out-of-town tournament, and I said, pick a tournament near Nashville. And I go, not only can I get us a room, but even though we have a massively large party,
yeah,
I can get my sales coordinator to just book all of our restaurants and stuff for the weekend, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, like, just do it, you know?
And Nashville's a booming soccer town, so it's probably pretty easy to find tournaments.
Not as... St. Louis is way easier.
That makes sense. I guess I should say it's an emerging soccer
market. Let me rephrase it. The tournaments are like 35, 40 minutes out of town instead of being around town. The ones we're looking for, are they
like in Franklin though?
There's like Murfreesboro, Henderson, Franklin, all those towns like around. And Franklin's not a bad drive.
Yeah.
But, you know, the part of the appeal of Nashville is Nashville.
Right. You know? And all those you mentioned are 20, 25 minutes away without traffic.
Without traffic, yeah. And, you know, and depending on where you stay, you got to go all the way around. You know, it's a pain in the butt.
Sometimes. Oh, yeah.
So, you ready to go?
Let's do it.
All right. Well, we are back. This episode is a super rare episode.
When was the last time this happened?
It's been a long time. And I'll be honest with you, I even put in my notes that I'm kind of glad those other two aren't here because, you know, they've been bringing us down for some time.
Oh, man. Now. Wow. I won't go that far.
But no. But so honestly, don't tell them this because I don't want it getting out to them. But, you know, I'm kind of tired of them. I'm glad you're here.
Well, unfortunately for you, the listener, it's going to be an episode very sport heavy, both of the real kind and the make-believe kind. So if you are more into the comics and fantasy and all the other nerd shit that I don't listen to, you already downloaded, right? You did? Great. Move on to something else. That's perfectly fine.
I did. Well, before you stop listening too, I did want to bring up one thing before we start on the episode. I'm going to give you a peek behind the curtain of being a 44-year-old man that still likes to fancy himself efforting to be sexy for his wife. So, which means you have to manscape.
Okay. Now, wait, do we have a Manscaped promo?
But that's where I want to go with this because I found myself, and don't get me wrong, when I was a younger man and I needed to do that shit, I'd do that stuff once a week. Like, you just never know. You never know when you're going to have company and you want to have clean floors when company comes up.
That's pretty good.
I was up there doing it. And it's one of those things, there's two things I really don't want my wife to ever see me do: wipe my ass or manscape my area.
Yeah, I can
see that. The most embarrassing things I think I do, which is probably not accurate.
I mean, jerking off has got to be up there, too.
Well, there's no way she'll ever see that. unless we're in the middle of something, like where there's some kind of role play going on, which has never been done, that kind anyway. So I was up there doing my manscaping, my trimming, and I, like you, obviously listen to podcasts, and there's Manscaping.
Yes.
Is like a massive sponsor for podcasts.
Yes.
So one of the advertising things that I heard was about the new 4.0 or whatever.
Oh, the prop lid and all that stuff.
Well, and it even has a light to help you see.
Yeah.
So I'm up there trimming in the bathroom, and I got to tell you, ample lighting is not the issue. It's more like
weird angles is where the issue is.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, there's no amount of darkness that are people manscaping in caves?
How do you get a taint? I don't know how to get the taint. I'm not very effective with that.
Well, and do you think a light on your device would help you find a way?
Is there like a little mirror that comes with the light?
You shine a light all day. I can't see my taint. I was thinking about that. I was in there in the bathroom and I was, had the angle. I had the foot up on the counter. I was trying to figure it out. And I go, you know what won't help me? A fucking light on my razor. That's not going to help me.
I've talked about this podcast before, Puck Soup, which is it's a hockey podcast, but they talk a lot of professional wrestling and pop culture. I can't recommend it enough. And one of the funniest moments in the podcast history is they had a female reporter as a guest host.
Yeah.
And she's on, and they have to do their ad reads, and is she's trying to be a good sport and do the ad read, and like as soon as she starts, Greg goes, "Oh no, not that one!"
Is it Manscaped?
Yeah, that's hilarious. Manscaped.
Yeah, but she could, a good host or a good personality would have improv'd and made that about. She'll like it, trust me. Something like that.
Oh, it was hilarious. You could tell she's like just uncomfortable, and they're just giggling.
It was like Colin Jost and Michael Che writing each other's jokes.
Those guys are awful.
Oh, dude, I like those two guys.
Do you?
Now, keep in mind, I don't watch the show.
Okay.
I only watch the sound bites, and I watch when they read each other's jokes is the thing that's released most on TikTok.
Okay.
I think that's hilarious. And I like when Pete Davidson's on there.
Yes. Did you watch any of this past week?
No, absolutely not. And we're talking about SNL for those who don't know.
There was a woman on who I've never seen before, Sarah something, I believe.
And that's a weird last name.
Yeah, Sarah something.
I believe.
I think she... Well,
is that Jewish?
She definitely did not believe in Jesus Christ. Okay. I can tell you that. And she did a bit making fun of Colin Jost for 4 minutes, and I thought it was cringe. And she was getting lots of praise on Twitter. And I just... maybe I'm out of touch. I don't know. You haven't seen it, so it's hard to dissect
and she was, it. Was she the host?
No, she's a bit player who's getting like a weekend update
like
role.
A feature?
Yeah.
Like a feature?
It was rough. Now, I will say they did have a fake commercial for a dog park, but for men in relationships, which was pretty good. It's like two guys walk up to this dog park and like, Marvel? You like Marvel? I like Marvel too. And,
I don't.
They're pretty good.
I don't watch it. And between all of the subscription services, I'm sure I could get it, the next day. But I just, with girls that are on TikTok, I almost exclusively get my SNL stuff from TikTok and the small bits of... Because I don't follow a shit ton on TikTok. I follow just the stuff, my daughters, and then some of their friends, and then the comedy things that I like. And that's all I follow. And I Monday morning taking a shit. Oh, let's see what the funny viral clips were.
I'm not a TikTok guy.
Oh, you shouldn't be. No, you shouldn't be. There's no reason. I don't think there is one single app that has done so much to dumb down attention spans other than TikTok.
Well, Twitter's coming into the room.
Well, no. Attention spans.
Yeah.
Twitter and Facebook have just dumbed us in overall.
Yes.
That's made us stupider and divisive and any kind of adjective you want to throw at it. TikTok, though, takes our attention span and shrinks it down to this big. I did a little motion with my hands where I went down to 1 inch for those that can't see. But, I'm on it because my kids are on it.
Sure.
So you follow, see what your kids are doing.
Making sure they're not getting to them. Crazy dances,
yeah,
crazy drugs, hardcore.
Them TikTok pedophiles are trying to trap them or whatever it is they do. I did have a friend that Instagram had a Instagram lecherous Instagram guy go after his daughter, and to the point where she was exchanging personal information where to go.
Oh no!
Stuff one time, yeah,
damn, this was that's scary.
A few years ago, she was just and he worked her, man. He overtime, and this is a smart dude with some smart kids. Fuckers are just good, you know?
That's very creepy.
That's why you're on the social medias with your kids.
Yes.
And that's why we make them all private. And hey, just a lesson to you guys. If you take anything from this episode, it's watch the TikToks.
Watch out for them pervs out
there.
And
the Insta-pervs, yeah. But that said, unless you got any updates you want to give us on Tom's life.
Well, I think the biggest update to give is, look, I'm not saying it was the greatest coaching win of all time, but my son's soccer team was 0-8-1 going into the last game of the year this past Saturday. The team had scored only 4 goals all year, all scored by my son John, not a big deal. And I looked at the schedule, I'm like, this is the one team I think we can beat at the end of the year. And It was cold as hell on Saturday. Kids were all shivering. We had no subs. They had two subs. And we won 1-0.
That's a... You poetically had it better than that.
Yes, they I basically paraphrased the end of Braveheart, where Robert the Bruce tells of what happened at the Battle of Brandenburg, I think. Sounds right. We'll go with that.
Yeah, the end of the movie.
The end of the movie. They fought like warrior poets. They fought like, they didn't say Scotsmen. They're cougars.
Yeah, they fought like cougars.
So if they really fought like cougars.
They fought like a bunch of women trying to pick up.
Yeah, they fought like the Real Housewives of Tampa Bay or whatever the hell it
is
now.
Pretty tough battle if you're going to do that.
Throwing tables and chairs and what? Oh my. But the, you know, another cool part was my son wasn't the one who scored. It was another kid on the team that had been trying all year.
That's good coaching right there.
Yeah, and the best coaching I did was telling the worst kid on the team repeatedly, no, you cannot play goalie.
Mm. Way to go, Tom Lasso.
Oh, that's right.
I would tell you this. I'm going to leave all of the names out to protect innocent, because this is a thing that could get you in trouble by your state's governing body when it comes to not adult soccer associations. I'm really protecting myself here.
Okay.
But in a Kansas City tournament a couple weekends ago, I made my competitive youth soccer debut as a coach.
Oh, how'd it go?
Well, it was a tough game. There was a bad call. I have video of it. It was a bad call. Our coach was double yellowed in the same same few minutes. I hear my name yelled, Jeremy. So I take off the coat and I sprint over, say, anything you need to tell me? He just goes, keep them fresh. So I had about 8 minutes of a game. Now, I'll tell you this. It should have been a 0-0 game. That's how good contested the game was. We ended up losing 2-1. And the one goal that was a legitimate goal that they scored was because the very opening, as soon as the whistle blew on the pitch, their girl just kind of walked by us, and it was like our girls didn't know the game had started, and then she just took a dead sprint straight at Hayden, and Hayden was like, fuck, and just sprinted straight back at her, because as the keeper, she has to come out, and this girl just hammered it, and Hay got a hand on it. But it was just hammered so hard, and there was so much spin that instead of going straight up, it like top spinned back over and then bounced in. And it was just, no one was awake yet.
Yeah.
Then we played amazing, and then the bad call happened. And I'll, after that, I'm not going to bore people with it, but it was a game where there were zero scoring chances outside of the two. The bad call set up a penalty kick, and the girl buried it in the corner. Hey, had no chance. I come in, and I'm looking around and moving the girls, and one of the girls, just like your situation, comes up. She's a defender. She's our center back, and she goes, can I play forward? I go, no. Go back there. Take that girl. I want you to move her to the right wing and take the right wing and move her over to the middle. And they almost scored, and I go, now that's coaching. And then the whistle blew.
That's funny, because the one goal we scored on, we have one kid that I made play center back the entire season because he's really good at it, and he doesn't mind playing. And he's also got the biggest boot on the team.
So he can score from center back, too, probably at your age, if he needs
first
to.
First grade.
Well, I mean,
the ball goes maybe 10 yards.
I mean, because of how they push up and they shift a little more, he could probably get involved in a play and still make it back.
Yeah, so but what I did is I had him take an indirect kick on a handball, and then I go, just put it in the box, and that's what he did. And it just bounced around, and the kid got free and just put it in.
Now, on an indirect, how did you coach the indirect? What did they do?
I just told him to kick it in the middle because I figured that somebody was going to get hit with the ball.
Well, it had to touch your team, you know, because the rule is, and there's a lot of team in even the highest level of youth, they violate the rule. The rule is the ball is supposed to turn one full rotation.
Yeah.
And people will just run up and tap it and move, and the girl, and it drives me insane. I go, there's no skill involved in there. Making it move one rotation, there's a little skill that comes with it,
yeah.
You know, and it's frustrating, but, you know, it is what it is. Well, that's fun. I mean, that's the biggest update, but your season's done.
We are done.
And is he going to stay at the CYC level? Or?
We have to talk, because it's funny, is halfway through the season, and something that he needs to understand is, even though he's correct, because he's a smart kid, telling the rest of your teammates you suck and we suck is not a way to endure friendships.
No, that won't do it.
Doesn't make your dad or coach look good.
I mean, there's still a great bar at our soccer association for you to come hang out with. Adam.
Yeah, so I asked him if he wanted to go do either St. Peter's or, you know, select or whatever. He's probably not ready for select because he's too emotional.
See, like I said, you still think about that wrong.
Yeah.
The only way you'll know is if you're in it. And they cater it. There's levels to this game. There's levels to this game.
He needs to go a whole season without running off the field screaming and crying.
That happens still. That happens still in YDA and rec also.
Oh,
I mean,
man.
In club. I mean, it's club, you know, like I've told you, club is not just ultra competitive.
Sure.
There's rec levels. There's everything. The good news about once you get, if you get in early, you're more likely to develop that team earlier.
Yeah.
Is what's good about it.
There's some good points there.
And there's some really good beer to be had while you're out there, while we're all hanging out together.
And I don't have to coach anymore, which is probably the biggest selling point of them all.
And the food's good there.
There you go.
All of that said, we've caught up, we've chit-chatted, but Tom, it's not why we're here.
Why are we here?
Well, I'm going to tell you why we're here.
Because you and me are elite of this podcast.
We are being the elite right now. We have went on ad nauseum in this podcast about AEW. Sometimes we go down the rabbit hole unintentionally, and we stay in that pool a little too long. But this episode is going to be designed to stay in that pool, and people are just going to have to fucking deal with it. Because this past weekend was a pay-per-view Full Gear.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first pay-per-view for AEW that I have purchased.
It should have been in St. Louis.
It should have been in St. Louis. That's true. It was the culmination of a two-year-long story that AEW has pulled off, which is old-school wrestling. And it was probably, I know this is hyperbole, and they say this about everything, but the last pay-per-view was probably their most important pay-per-view as a company, because everybody knew there were going to be a lot of debuts, and you knew CM Punk was coming back. But this one, to me, was equally as important because it didn't have all of that glitz and those big surprises. It didn't have all the things that people were just, there was a lot of people on bated breath waiting to see what's happened. This was just a wrestling show. A good old school 3.5 hour wrestling pay-per-view that delivered front to back.
So let me ask you this. I've gotten every AE pay-per-view since Revolution.
You said AE pay-per-view. I said no W. You just left that one out.
I've gotten everyone since Revolution last year. So what made you decide to get this one?
Well, I thought that we were going to see the culmination of that of the storyline that we'll get into in a little bit. I knew that would make you happy, and honestly, this is not me pandering, because you are my friend. But I just wanted to kind of shit watch something that I knew was going to be a feel good moment for you as well.
Mm-hmm.
It had a tag match that I was super interested in, because you know I love the Lucha Brothers.
Yes,
it was this card front to back, and they've always put on great cards. But this card front to back, even in the dud matches, and I do think there was one. And
probably
we'll,
two.
We'll talk about we'll talk about that here in a second, because I'm going to ask you those questions. Was solid as it gets, and like I said to me. The other reason was because I thought this was so important, because that last one was an easy pay-per-view to pull off, because you had so many big things with Bryan Danielson, with CM Punk, with Adam Cole.
Cole they didn't know about.
Well, yeah, but you knew. I mean, but that, well, part of the next day, that was all the buzz. I mean,
sure,
all that stuff.
Sure.
So you had all those things, and which they needed, which was great. But you can't live on doing that every show. So this one to me was like, okay, we had a lot of storylines going. Let's see what some kind of payoffs to those are. And let's see what they're capable of when they don't have big names to surprise on people.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And I mean, honestly, now you could probably count on one hand how many wrestlers that are out there that make sense for AEW to go get, that would generate buzz for a casual fan.
Yeah, and I've been a firm believer that they don't need to go get a bunch more wrestlers. They need to hold off on that, because then they're going to get inflated like WWE is, and then they're going to have to try to brand split or something crazy. I don't think they'll do that.
I think there's only three that make sense right now, and that would be, without going too much down this, Steen or Kevin Owens.
Yeah, 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 which that's still up in the air. There's a lot of weight behind that, but he's about to work a Big E Big E is being the champ in WWE. They're going to work an angle. It's a great angle to let him go on. But we don't know. There could be AJ Styles is clearly happy over there. And Kevin Owens might. I know Kevin is a little more disgruntled about creative. He would be massive, because Kevin can work. That's what Kevin. And Fight Owens Fight needs to be. We need to get back to that.
I will bet you, and I know you won't take the bet, but I'd bet anybody $100 this time next year he's not signing another contract at WWE.
Oh, I believe you, but I just know it's the pro wrestling game and stranger things have happened.
Sure.
So.
O'Reilly will be gone soon.
Yeah.
And then Sami Zayn. Apparently his contract's up soon.
Oh, Sami Zayn would be massive.
And those are the three. Everybody else, they either won't come or AEW doesn't need
them. Yeah. I mean, everybody's still talking about Wyatt. He's now apparently making movies.
I don't think his gimmick works where AEW's going now.
I think he can be I think Bray Wyatt's creative mind, and I think was stifled massively, and I think he can pull a different angle. I think that's been evident by all the rumor and the dirt sheets saying that it even pissed off Randy Orton how they fucked him over. Apparently Randy's been a lot more agreeable to work with for the other wrestlers. He's been a lot more able to wanting to do fun stuff. Like, he was mad because he wanted to come out on a camel with Riddle in Saudi Arabia, and Vince told him that's not your character. And I guess the locker room heard him say, "What the fuck does that mean? Like, what's not my character?"
Yeah,
you know, he's trying to lean into the RK-Bro because apparently he's having fun.
Oh, good.
But you know, so I think that. I think Bray is, everybody seems to think that his mind is like a Scott Hall mind. He can do stuff.
Yeah.
But it's hard to say with guys like him because WWE just is so badly managed, micromanaged, just badly, you know. So it'll be interesting to see. I think you're right. I don't want to ever see a guy like Braun Strowman. Braun Strowman was boring to me in WWE. I think he's going to be boring there. The most entertaining Braun ever was when he was with Bray Wyatt.
Yeah.
You know, so... Yeah, I don't know. I think they've got, and if honest to God, I don't want to see this happen, but I think they could even trim the fat. I think guys like, unfortunately, we're not going to see them trim the fat because there's nowhere to go now other than WWE with Ring of Honor closing doors.
Well, it sounds like Ring of Honor may come back and start from scratch.
They lost Jay Lethal. That was the only announcement we saw.
Yeah.
And he's going to have some great matches.
He is younger than I thought he was.
Yeah, he's just been in the game a long time.
Yeah, because I would have said north of 40 easy, but he's only 36.
Well, and they made a big deal how he's 20 years in the industry.
Yeah.
You know, and dude, him and Sammy Guevara, and you know, it's going to be great. And so let's quit beating around the bush of all these what would happen. Let's talk about what did happen. Let's go through the card. And okay. I'm not going to talk about the buy-in, although I will say this. Sheeta.
Yeah.
She's fucking great. And it's good to see her back, like, wrestling full-time again, because big, small, she puts on a fucking show.
I love Sheeta, and I love even more her tag team partner in the match, Thunder Rosa.
Oh, I
think Thunder Rosa is a star. I cannot wait until her and Britt fight at a pay-per-view.
So let's talk about the logistics of the pay-per-view. We were watching it down here. I had this set up. We were going to record and release a special episode of us commenting on it.
Mm-hmm.
This, for whatever reason, my Bleacher Report app on my Fire Stick just would not stream it fast. So I couldn't get my Bleacher Report app to open up on my TV upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to stream it from, when I told you we figured it out, I was taking it from my computer and mirroring it onto my TV. And my computer would kick off every once in a while, and I had to get it back up real quick.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, so Will, who's Jay's son, and Jay came over to watch it. And I really would like us all to do one together because I think it'd be a blast.
Yeah.
And Jay's going to buy the next one, he said, so we're going to watch the next. I'm all in. We can rotate it, and I would watch them all. I love these pay-per-views.
I purposely kind of sabotaged some things to... I wanted to watch that moment by myself.
Yeah.
Right, wrong, or indifferent. We can get into that later.
Yeah, I'm going to hear about your tears.
Yeah, but absolutely, we can watch them.
So that was the problem going into the pay-per-view. So I will tell you this. And I'll get into when we get to the Lucha Brother FTR match here in a little bit when we get to it. But so the first match, unfortunately, I did not get to see the whole thing.
Oh, because no.
But I did go back and didn't watch it, but I watched all the clips and highlights because what I did watch, you know, AEW is doing great with their curtain jerkers.
Yes, they are.
That match. MJF, I told you he's Roddy Piper.
Yes.
And what I meant by that is...
But so he can actually work.
Very, very first match... Well, Roddy could... Yeah. His psychology was off the chart. It didn't have to work if you could tell a story. Ultimate Warrior couldn't do either. So it was Roddy Piper. It was MJF against Darby Allin. Well, Roddy... God damn it, stop it. MJF brought up a good point in his promo. No one has cleanly... pinned him in the middle of the ring. You know, Roddy Piper's famously said, to other wrestlers, he goes, I'll never let them pin me because that's when I lose my money. So Roddy Piper for years was, it was only beaten with DQs or sleeper holds or count outs. He would not, he wouldn't let Hogan pin him, and it was it caused a lot of strife between the two.
Yeah.
He's like, I just won't let you. And he even said now later in life before he died, he goes, you know, if I'd have just let you pin me once, we probably would have made a lot more money. And Hogan was like, I've been telling you that since day one. You know, but Piper was stubborn. And I'm not saying MJF is stubborn, but I'm saying he's getting that reputation. Like, even as the heel, even as the most arrogant, smug, and what I love about him, again, comparing him to Piper, he will literally say whatever. As he's the envelope pusher in the company.
Well, he also stays in character.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I mean, too. Yeah. And but I mean, some of the digs he takes, you're like, ooh, are we still allowed to do that?
Some of that Darby stuff is uncomfortable. Like dad dying and stuff, or uncle dying, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, but that's his character. And I got to tell you what, and there was much ado, and they sold the angle great about how Darby said that the only way you could beat me is to wrestle. And MJF kept saying, yeah, I'm a better rep. But they went out and worked a fucking great match.
That was fantastic. And both those guys are, MJF's only 25, 24?
Mm.
And Darby, I think, is 27, 8.
24, yeah. Maybe giving him a year or two. Yeah, I think he's 24, but and he's too talented and too charismatic for his age.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. He gets it like nobody else.
The only negative I'll say about it is I'm tired of the ring, the diamond ring. I want something.
The finish, and we can get into this later on.
Well, we're going to break it down. That's the first match. Let's go.
Yeah. Yes, I would say that was looking to be about a 4.5-star match. To finish, I thought, I agree with you, was just kind
of, yeah, it wasn't an A-plus because of the, I don't mind the finish. I'm just tired of that ring. I wasn't so big on the whole win this ring gimmick tournament.
Yeah,
I
think and you kind of forget about it.
It's kind of silly.
Yeah.
I did like that the interference wasn't like completely the cause for the match. You know, MJF, even though he cheated to win, he's a heel, he should.
Yep.
He didn't need Wardlow coming out there and knocking him out, something like that. MJF did it in a heel fashion all on his own.
I cannot wait for it, whether it's 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years, when Wardlow turns face on MJF, that is going to be a pop for the ages.
And we expected it this pay-per-view, and it did not happen.
It's coming, yeah. It's been teased.
Oh, yeah, they've been teasing it for a while. Stick with me here. Not just Piper, but he's got a lot of flair in him. Maybe they're teasing it in order to bait someone eventually for a title. And like, no, we've been tight this whole time. I could see it go both ways, yeah, with his character.
Yeah, absolutely. No, yeah, fantastic match. And I don't think a loss hurts Darby in the slightest.
No, I mean, Darby's back-to-back pay-per-views have lost twice. And to CM Punk and MJF, and I don't think either one of those hurt him.
Nope.
He's got the rub.
Yep.
I'll tell you this. Here's one thing I will say about Darby. I think his rub is good enough now he doesn't need Sting.
I was about to ask, do you let those two win the tag belts anytime soon?
I got to tell you, after losing two single matches in order to get him some steam, because he's clearly not in a title picture, because the title pictures are pretty well set right now, I think I'd give him a tag run with Sting. That's a fun thought. That's the only way I like Sting being around.
The problem is it's probably at least a year away.
Yeah, and they can't take it off my favorite wrestlers in the organization, right. The Lucha Brothers.
And then you got to have the heels have it for a little bit, too, yeah. Whoever beats them. So it's something to think about. And I think you could do a face versus face Darby versus Sammy for a TNT title.
Yeah, to have him get it back.
Yeah.
And we'll get to Sammy here in a little bit.
I honestly don't think that Darby and MJF feud is done.
I don't think. Well, so here's my thought. I think they're going to put it on the shelf. Because then it's a good story when one of them does have a title, or MJF has a title and Darby chases that title.
Yeah.
And Darby and MJF says, I beat you the only time we've wrestled on a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
It wasn't close. You know, he builds that underdog, I'm chasing the title story.
Yeah.
And I think, and here's what, we'll come back to this at the end in the main match. They're so good right now at doing old school wrestling storylines.
Yes.
That I could see them doing that.
Yeah.
But what was, so that match, we both agree, we'll go with the 5-point scale. You said it's a 4. I'll give it a flat 4. That's a good, so the next match was, that was the.
So I'm already pumped up. I'm like, man, this is great. How are they going to slow this down a little bit?
They do not.
By not at all.
They get, the next match was the Lucha Brothers, right? Or no, what was the next match? I can pull up the card.
The next match was, shit. Yeah, we're like so excited about it. Because the third one was Bryan Danielson versus Miro. Was that the second match?
It might have been the...
No, I think it was the Lucha Brothers in FTR, right?
Yeah, here's Full Gear 2021. I have the match card right now.
Yeah, it was Lucha Brothers and FTR, I'm pretty sure.
It was Lucha Brothers, which is Penta El Zero Miedo, whatever they call him, and Rey Fénix against FTR, which is Hardwood and Wheeler.
And you know, those guys at first, I didn't really see with those two.
Hardwood and Wheeler?
Oh, my God.
Oh, they're so good.
Oh, FTR is great.
And it, you know, it's not just that they're like, well, they're an old school tag team, which they are. You know, they do everything in an old school tag team, old school heel tag team way. But God, they're good.
And they cut good promos.
They're good. And
they can wrestle in any style.
And having Tully Blanchard with them, I was like, ah. But I dig it now. I like it now. So you know I'm huge over with the Death Triangle. And actually, I think the Death Triangle's done because I think Pac's on his own now. But the Lucha Brothers... I got to tell you this, and here's the one thing I want to point out, how good this pay-per-view was. For those that don't know, my wife hates everything pro wrestling. She watched the pay-per-view, and I've never seen someone genuinely mark out for false finishes than I did Missy. Like, by the fourth one, she's like, oh, give me a break.
Yeah.
She's like, you got to be kidding me. And I got to tell you, this match, here's why this match for me, and this was a 5 out of 5 for me. And we'll get to your rating in a second. But here's why it was a 5 out of 5 for me. Because there were so many points where going into this match, I thought FTR was going to take the straps. They got the AAA straps.
Yeah.
They were going to take the straps. They did let me rephrase it. 4.5 out of 5. And you and I texted about why it's not.
Yeah.
But barring the very end of the match, which I think was botched. I haven't read about it, but I think it was botched.
No, okay. Yeah, I want to see why you think that.
But I think that the amount of false finishes and the logical conclusion to what would be a good storyline and keep this feud going, they bypassed it every time someone kicked out. And I was like, well, this match is fucking great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was so many big moves, so many things. Every time you see Rey Fénix, you're like, oh, he does things that I've never seen, and they still figure out ways to do things that you've never seen.
I know it's lazy to say Rey Mysterio 2.0, but... kind of fits because his name is Ray. He's a little taller, right? I think he's 5'6". Maybe?
Yeah, which who cares? You're under 6 foot.
But
taller.
I mean, the moves he makes, and you know, one thing that
consistently without fucking up.
Yes, and one thing that you know, Cornette bitches a lot about with the gymnastics. I feel like Rey Fénix, when he does his gymnastics, still makes some moves look like they would fucking hurt.
Yeah, because also Rey Fénix, too, does the gymnastics the way Cornette praised when Rey Mysterio was at the top of his game.
Right, right.
So he can get... Jim Cornette he's the old man screaming from his front porch now.
But he's got a lot of good points.
He's got great points. In fact, his thing with Miro, he's like, oh, I'm all in on the Redeemer storyline. Yep. He goes, they did misuse Miro when they came in.
They did, big time.
And I think Miro had a lot to do with his own character, and he knew that. And even when the Redeemer start, and Jay and I talked about this, even when the Redeemer angle started, I was like, this is hokey. But now he's not laying it on his thick. Now it's subtle, like when he looks up at God, when he's like, when something doesn't work and he looks up and asks why. I said, at some point he's going to say, fuck you, Joe Boo, I'll do it myself.
Yeah.
But the Lucha Brother match, going back to that, though, Rey Fénix, like you said, Rey Fénix, the reason, and you're right, it's an easy comparison, but he does these high-impact, amazing acrobatic moves that Rey Mysterio probably didn't know he could do because, you know, you stand on the shoulders of the guy that did it before you.
Absolutely.
But he doesn't miss them in spots. Like, I know guys mess up and shit all the time, but he seems to, in big matches, deliver big spots without... And when he runs down the rope, you know, when he Undertaker walks but sprints down the rope, I'm like... He does
it's incredible.
That. If he does that 300 times a year, you got to think he's going to fall 5. But we have not seen it.
Right, right.
It's unbelievable. But let's talk about the finish of the match. And the Lucha Brothers went over.
Yep, and then FTR tries to do a Killer Bees kind of gimmick.
Yeah, I'm glad you knew what I was talking about. So they tried to pull a B. Brian Blair and what was the other one? And Killer Bees. Jumping Jim Bronzell. They tried to pull a move. If those that don't know, in the old school 80s, Killer Bees would, at some point in the match, when one was very hurt, they'd roll into the ring and they'd come out with masks and they'd switch. And then the fresh guy would actually get the roll up or get the hot return for the face. FTR won the AAA titles from the Lucha Brothers earlier in the month by doing that, being masked. Well, they both go under the ring, and they come up, and the fresh man comes in, but then the fresh man immediately loses.
Yeah.
I think that there was either supposed to be something else there, maybe time got them, because they was a, you know, it was a long match.
Yeah.
Or there was supposed to be, maybe they didn't feel like to go for it. I think they were going to pull the mask off and say, hey, I'm not the legal man, and then there was going to be some controversy, and then this Wednesday. We'll see what happens on their promo this Wednesday.
Yeah.
Because I felt like either it was botched or they just really badly didn't land the stick.
It just abruptly kind of ended. Like, oh, hey, they have masks on, and it's over. Like,
yeah.
To go with the first match as well, like, great match with kind of a, finish.
Yeah.
So I would say a solid 4 again for me on that one.
It was 4.5 for me because I just love the spectacle. And see, I'm a hypocrite because there's sometimes I don't like the spectacle of the Young Bucks. But I will say this, the Young Bucks have settled into a good, quote-unquote, American style of storytelling in the ring, and I'm all in on them.
Yeah.
I hated them as much in their highlights as everyone else did, that all the Cornettes of the world did. But that takes us to the next match, which was another singles match. And again, not to jump too far ahead, but another weird ending.
Yep.
But still,
I was very surprised. I would have bet $50 going into this match we would have seen the debut of Lana.
Yeah, I would have thought that too. I would have either thought that. I thought for sure there's no way that Bryan Danielson was going to go over.
Really? Okay.
Because I thought what was going to happen at the end was going to happen. And I thought Miro is the perfect first feud. Because it's a feud that we could see 5 or 6 different times over 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's that good. First off, you know, you and I were texting throughout the show. I said I was all in on this match. You said, oh, me too. And we did think that though there was going to be a letdown, like a cool down somewhere.
Yeah, and it's like, nope.
We saw their this match was so fucking good. Listen.
And what a testament to the wrestlers involved, because in wrestling, unfortunately, sometimes you have a hot match and you put kind of a colder match afterwards, and it kind of puts pressure on whoever follows up a great match to do even one better to keep that crowd hot. There's going to be a natural lull. And almost to a T, and we'll get into it, everybody almost followed up strong.
And just so people know, that is by design. Sometimes they will put a cool down match because the crowd can't sustain it through the whole show, so they want the crowd to get a chance to take a breath, get the bathroom break.
It's like sex, baby.
Yeah, that's right. And then it's halftime. They'll strategically play some halftime matches so everybody can chill.
Or the popcorn match if you're a total nerd like myself.
Yeah, that's what they do. And we were for sure after two fast action, heavy action.
Too fast, too fuego?
Yeah, too fuego. That's funny. matches. We didn't see that. Nope. Right? And so Miro, this is the Miro that we've all the fans that have gotten behind him and rallied behind him has expected in his WWE run. This is the one that was there.
Fantastic upper card heel.
And see, I think Miro could also be a face. I think he could be a face if he wanted to. Handsome Miro. But I want him a heel.
Yeah.
But this is also, if there's no more evidence that Bryan Danielson, the American Dragon, Daniel Bryan, however you know him, worked under Shawn Michaels for a long time as a training, he can work a match with anybody, any style, anyway. He can get his shit in and get it over against whoever he's fighting. The yes kicks, everything worked so well.
Everything looks painful.
And the
sells well.
The Jean-Claude Van Damme ending, or the moment where Miro was telling him to kick his side,
yeah,
and give him the kickboxer, yeah, bring it, and Daniel Bryan would kick him. I was like, oh, Miro does look unbeatable. So the ending of the match was a top rope DDT,
mm-hmm,
that knocked Miro out. Or well, then Daniel went into the guillotine choke,
mm-hmm,
and Miro was out. He was unconscious, so he was either knocked out or choked out. But the guy raised his hands down. So the good news is Miro's protected. He now only has 2 losses. One was not as clean as this one. This was a clean loss. Losing to Bryan Danielson doesn't hurt your career. Anybody, Kenny Omega could lose to Bryan Danielson.
I can't
remember
how Sammy beat him. Did Sammy beat him clean?
No, he had, it was,
was there a chair involved?
Was it skateboard? It was something. Something happened. Bryan Danielson can pin Kenny Omega and he'll be fine. Both guys will be fine. Bryan Danielson as big a star in terms of working and believability as anyone in wrestling today. So this is fine. Now, am I happy with the outcome? Man, I don't know. I think Miro, you know, depending or based on how this card turned out, still would have been a better choice for me. But are we going to get a great match? Really? We really will. So he moves forward to face the champ, which he'll find out at the end of this card who that champ is.
Yeah.
But what's that? What's your score on this match?
Again, I'd say a 4. I mean,
I'll give it a 4 as well.
It was a great match, great wrestling, told a good story. This is the stuff that I fell in love with as a kid in the 90s when I was in high school and I got into wrestling again. Realistic. Yeah, we know it's choreographed, but it felt like a fight. It's something that Cornette always bitches about. This seemed like a match between two competitors that weren't doing any goofy, gimmicky shit, and were really laying it in. And especially, as you mentioned, with that whole perfect scene with the, yeah, hit me again in the ribs.
Yeah, that was great. That was Kickboxer. For those that don't know, that's or Lionheart. It was Lionheart. So, and again, the thing that was cool about that this match, too, or all these matches, if you read Bleacher Report, who rates a card all the time, all three of these were A's, which 4 in our scale, too, is an A.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was no letdown. But and I'm not going to say this next match was a letdown, but I'll say it was a smart match to put here. The false count anywhere between Luchasaurus, Jungle Boy, Jungle Boy Jack Perry, Christian,
Jungle Boy Jack Perry,
and the Super Click, which is Young Bucks and Adam Cole, baby.
So again, I would have bet any money that there would be the Inner Circle match next to cool things down a little bit. But no, it's the Bucks. It, again, let's top the next person.
And so I'm going to tell you this. I told Jay, and I go, well, this match kind of makes sense because it is false count everywhere. It's not a street fight, even though it's a street fight.
Yeah.
So I don't know what I expected out of this match. I expected it to be a good match. I expected Super Click to go over.
I did too.
I expected Luchasaurus to shine. I didn't expect him to shine as bright as he did. He was fucking great, especially when he got outside the ring.
My problem with Luchasaurus is
he's the most unintimidating person without the mask on you'll ever see. He's the nicest looking guy. Yeah, you look like a good, nice fella. You know
where's the ceiling?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't think he's a champ. I think he's a perennial tag guy. I think he's dangerous. I think they could continue booking him like this, and it'd be a career, and we'll get one of those surprise title wins here or there.
Yeah.
A guy that's great in battle royals.
He's over with my kids. They love him.
Will, Jay's son, loves him. Mm-hmm. Christian, great in the match. Christian passing the concerto off to Jungle Boy was a good moment.
Which I thought was very interesting. Are they teasing a Jungle Boy heel turn?
See, I don't know. I know you said that, and Jay and I talked about it. I didn't get. I mean, it was a false count anywhere match. You use weapons.
But the concerto is a pretty dastardly heel.
Yeah, but it's also Christian's signature, and it was time to give it out from what the Young Bucks had done to him. Them, and
but I guess we're
they put thumbtacks in Jungle Boy's mouth and super kicked him.
Yes,
the concerto was the most comeuppance thing they could do.
What I guess where I'm looking at it is this. First off, where'd you give the match?
Well, first to give the match its total score, I want to give 2 scores.
Okay,
1 to right now what I think's the best entrance in all of AEW.
All about the boom.
Adam Cole, baby. That's the best.
And it was a lot of fun to sing in person.
CM Punk is a good one. Daniel Bryan says it's a little disappointing that they didn't jazz that up to get a little more energy. Kenny Omega, I love his. But in terms of crowd participation, you know, Adam Cole and I got to tell you, the super couple, Britt Baker, is pretty fucking good, too.
The doctor is here now.
DMD.
Yeah,
the
fun.
Crowd loves that stuff. But Adam Cole's is the best because he gets 2 moments. He gets the boom.
Yeah.
And then he gets the Adam Cole, baby.
I love, right now, besides Hangman, obviously, Adam Cole is my second favorite wrestler in the company.
Same with, like, Will, Jay Sutt.
Bumps like crazy. He is a big dork in real life. A super sweetheart, nice guy.
Kind of to the point where we talked about Bryan Danielson earlier, Adam Cole is an undersized Shawn Michaels. He can bump. He's got a good offense. He's believable. The what are they calling his sunrise right now? The
Panama
sunrise.
Yeah.
Not everybody's going to sell that move because it's a tough move to sell, but it's an incredibly awesome move.
He is over like Rover, sir.
And this match, I probably, as a whole, I want to say 4.5, but I'm going to go flat 4. I love the ending. I love the fact that Jungle Boy went over. I love Luchasaurus shined. I felt like Edge was...
Christian.
Christian. I felt like... You want to know why you knew Christian was in this match? Because they did something with a ladder I've never seen. And if you think that somebody's going to be invented with a ladder, it's Edge and Christian are the guys that come up with it. And so to me, Christian did exactly what I expected someone who's a 20, 30-year vet to do. He kind of took charge in this match in terms of, I guarantee you, he was in charge of the pacing and the plotting and coming out with some stuff. And he did not overshine anyone. He just, he had a great spear. And I was like, everybody had their part and they played it. And the Young Bucks and the Adam Cole, who are the best heels to watch, dude, they were great.
So, and I would go 3-7-5 on this one.
I could see that.
Yeah, I like the Bucks, but a little too much. If you hate the Bucks, you probably wouldn't like this match very much.
Yeah, this was a Bucks spot fest.
Where I came up with the, I think Jungle Boy, they might be teasing a heel, or Christian turns heel on Jungle Boy by trying to corrupt him to be have a little bit more of an edge. He's growing the shadow out a little bit more, you know. He wore jeans in this match instead
It was a false count anywhere.
True.
Yeah, put on the jeans.
But, you know, he hesitated on the concerto.
Jungle Boy even had the ribs wrapped knowing that it was going to be a street fight. Remember, Missy goes, why is his ribs wrapped? I go, street fight. Duh.
Simon Dallas Page, baby. Because where does this feud go? Is it over? Is this the blow off for them?
I hope it's a blow off and only.
So then where does Jungle Boy go? I think he gets into another situation where Christian maybe calls him out for being too soft. He needs to be edgier, and then he has to show. You know,
maybe he doesn't call him out for being too soft. Maybe he says you got to push yourself. You got to start making a name for yourself. And if they're not going to do it in booking, you're going to have to go out and pack people or something like that.
Says like Luchasaurus is holding you back. This Jungle Boy gimmick is stupid. Yeah, Jack Perry. I think there's.
Well, I tell you this. I know this is going to sound crazy, but a him versus Luchasaurus match would be fun. It'd be silly, but it'd be fun to watch. You know,
What if it wasn't silly though?
What?
What if it wasn't silly? What if to get Luchasaurus? So I don't even know what his real name is. I forget.
It's a Big Brother actor. I can't remember it, but the nicest. Have you seen him without his mask?
He's a sweetheart.
I
saw him on Big Brother. Yeah,
like you would want him to take your kids to the zoo for you.
He looks like he's going
to
teach English somewhere. Yeah. You know, what if you have a heel Jack Perry tear his mask off?
Well, that's just it too. If he's going to be heel, he won't go by Jungle Boy.
Oh, yeah, he's going to be Jack Perry.
He'll be Jackknife Jack Perry or something.
Well, that's why Jim Ross is always calling him Jack Perry.
I feel like if he goes...
There's a ceiling on a Jungle Boy.
Well, if he ever goes heel, he'll go heel by turning on Marco Stunt and beat the shit out of him. That's how it'll start. And then Luchasaurus...
Big hand raise for that.
Yeah, Luchasaurus will try to defend him or something. I don't know where it goes. So here's where I think it goes. Christian and that group continue to main event and the mid card, you know, if that's a sort of a thing, and the Super Click goes on to bigger and better things. I mean, that's just where it goes.
Where do you see them going?
Well, we're gonna find out Wednesday.
Yeah,
I think Kenny Omega's out of the. We're gonna talk about that a little bit. We'll come put a pin in them, and let's go back to the next match. Now, here's a match. This was Britt Baker versus Ty Conti.
Yes.
When this match started, I was like, here's the cool down match. And it was of sorts, but I'll tell you this. I'm going to ask you at the end of this, what you think the best match, what you think the worst match was.
Okay.
When this match was about 4 minutes into it, I was like, this is the worst match on the card.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll ask you what you think a surprise match was. And now this, by the end of it, became my surprise match. Because this match, I would have thought was going to be my... And I love Britt Baker. But I just know that AEW is having a hard time investing in stories on the women right now.
Yeah.
Because they... You know, but I don't think... But Britt's not the problem. Britt's probably the exception. That match with her and Thunder Rosa was the best women's match I think I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
This match,
and they smartly kept them away from each other.
And this match wasn't the best match I ever seen. I even brought up to Jay, and I meant to say this earlier. I think it's weird how they put Thunder Rosa on a shelf, you know, after that amazing match, and you know which means at some point she's going to come back.
I believe some of that was she was not a full time AEW employee.
You're right. That makes sense too. But Ty Conti has done some good work of late, but I had no expectations for this match. In the first 4 or 5 minutes of it, it didn't deliver. But then something happened in the match. Britt Baker really started selling some good in-ring psychology, and Ty Conti started getting some good fire. And I was like, by the end of the match, I go, that's a 3.75 or 3.5. That's a good match.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that high. I would say 3.25.
Let's
yeah,
go
definitely
three.
A 3. I'd go 3.25.
I tell you, as a cool-down match, you could pick worse matches.
Absolutely. And look, that's probably the best I've seen Ty Conti wrestle a match.
Yeah.
She's still, both of these women have wrestled a combined, what, 8 years?
Maybe
10?
Maybe, yeah.
Ty Conti, obviously, you know, going into this match, you knew Britt was going to go over. I mean, there was no question.
But, you know,
but Ty is...
The way she went over, though, was pretty good. Again, Britt's got flunkies, and they interject themselves in the match.
Yeah.
But they
I can't remember. Did Anna Jay come down at all?
Yeah, they were both down.
Okay.
But they weren't so much into this match that Ty Conti can say, well, she didn't beat me, it was them. Britt finished her,
yep,
like she does. And I got to tell you, the Brittable Claw, her, I like it. I like it because she puts the glove on. It's like the Mandible Claw. I like it because it's a cross face, and then she adds the DMD part to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a stupid finisher, but the way she does it, it adds drama. I mean, Ty, they had her fighting it off, and finally succumb. I mean, that little sequence they did with all the little roll-ups.
Those were awesome.
Fun as hell.
And the addition of the curb stomp for Britt makes it for me, too. That's awesome.
Yeah.
She's still not the best in-ring competitor. She's not bad by any means. She's above average.
You're talking about Britt or
Britt Baker.
Yeah.
But her ability, her personality is so over.
Yeah.
And she is... The problem they have with her, and it's right now, it's an okay problem, is she's a heel, but she's clearly the fan favorite.
Yeah. I mean, I think the AEW women's problems are now, as we speak, overblown. I think they've turned a corner. They finally have the talent there, which clearly they didn't 2 years ago. I mean, I'm very curious to see who they put the TBS belt on. I think it should be Thunder Rosa.
I think it's a clever belt, the way they're doing the TNT for men, the TBS for women.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's very smart.
I guess, can we talk about the women's division as a whole right now?
Yeah, we can do it a little
bit. So, I think you've got Stars and Britt and Thunder Rosa. They're in the S tier.
Yes.
In that A tier, I think right now you've got Sheeta.
I like Trish Statlander.
I think she's probably in that category.
Probably at the bottom of it.
And then Jade Cargill, because of how they're protecting her and where they got her.
They're protecting her, but she's got to stop hurting people, and she's got to quit being so stiff, and she's got to get a personality.
You got Serena Deeb in there now, too.
Yeah.
And then you got the next tier of women who are green, who I expect things from moving forward with...
The Bunny?
No.
Well,
Bunny's... How old do you think the Bunny is?
I don't know. Oh, she's old, isn't she?
She's like 36.
Yeah, she's old. I remember hearing that.
Ty, Anna Jay, Jamie Hayter, Your Mileage May Vary, Red Velvet.
Yeah.
I think they got... I mean,
when you start saying them out loud, there's a lot of women. Ruby Soho has some upside for them.
Yeah, sure.
Her character, it was very good the way they brought her in and that whole package. I just don't think Ruby's mic skills are quite there yet. But once she leans into that and she gets that and she works on that, with her gimmick and everything will be fun.
Yeah.
She's
trying to be a female CM Punk.
Yeah, she doesn't have it yet. And they gave it to her. They put it on a platter for her, and now it's her.
Oh, you got... I'll tell you who I think is, if we're just going pure attractiveness, Penelope Ford.
Oh, yeah, Penelope Ford. Yeah, she's got her shit together. Woo. Yeah.
You know, and you got Rebel. It's like
they got a lot. The point is, they've got a lot, and now they're given a mid card belt.
Yeah, which
to help. That's good because it'll help develop stories. That's all they need to do is develop better stories.
Yep.
I don't like Nyla.
No,
I don't like. And
I'm not trying it. I know it's controversial. Yeah. That you
got to
be.
It's limit. It's like she's like Braun Strowman. It's limited.
Yeah, you know, you keep her around. I'm not saying she should lose her job by any means, but you have her.
I hate Vicky Guerrero at this point, and I love Guerrero, and I understand why she's there.
You have Nyla basically beat the shit out of enhancement faces and then have people like the Anna Jays and the
Sheetas,
Red Velvet.
What Sheeta did?
Yeah, go over on Nyla to kind of go up to the next
If
hole.
They can get Sheeta enough English to be likable on the mic, dude, her moveset is so good.
I'll tell you a little something about Sheeta. The first time I even heard of her was in the Kansas City show right before the pandemic. They did a dark after the Dynamite. And my friend, who's my next door neighbor, who watched some of the pay-per-views with, who went to the Rampage with me, he heard Sheeta's music. He's like, hey, would you mind if we stick around and watch Sheeta? I had no idea who Sheeta was. And she was like in a four-way match on Dark.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, she's fun and I got a good gimmick and talented.
Yeah.
During the pandemic, or during her title run, behind Cody and Jungle Boy, that is John Hummel's third favorite wrestler. He loves awesome. Sheeta. He thinks she's cool as hell.
Well, let's get off the women. and let's actually track back, because I did make a mistake. Before the Britt Baker and Ty Conti match was the Ultimate Cooldown match, and Cody Rhodes, Pac versus Malakai Black, who I love. I love Malakai Black.
Great. He's doing so much better in this company than
and
WWE.
And Andrade El Idolo, who's also got an incredible moveset.
Has not found his niche yet in this company.
Well, here's the problem. And I know Cody Rhodes right now is Nickelback of AEW. Is Cody, you know, if you actually break it down musically, they're not bad. But it's pretty in fashion to hate on them. It's in fashion to boo Cody no matter what happens now. And the crowd booed him.
When did the crowd turn on Cody?
I don't know. And I don't know why they did it.
I think some of it has to do with the show.
He's the EVP. Well, the show was... He's got started booing before the show started airing.
Yeah, because
in the show, they was when they captured it.
I mean, for me, when I... If I was at a show... And actually, I mean, I loved when Cody... I like the Fuego 2.0 gimmick. So, for those who don't know, there's a wrestler enhancement talent named Fuego del Sol, who is a YouTube darling who's on the lower card. And he right now is doing a tag team called Fuego del Two Soul, Two Sexy Two Soul, something like that.
Two Sexy Two Fuego.
Yeah. Two Fuego Two. Yeah, whatever. It doesn't matter. Anyway, his partner is Cody
in a
luchador mask, and they wrestled in St. Louis. And I will say, they're one of the bigger pops of the night.
Yeah,
and I think people like that.
It's almost like a Rocky Maivia thing. How that it's like. People feel like Cody's being forced as a face on him.
Yeah, and he's come out and said, I will not turn heel. I'd rather go.
Think that's a little bit of Cody working the gimmick.
I think it is, too.
Here's the thing, though. Cody has done a really great job of not forcing himself. He didn't put the belt on himself. He put the right belt on himself, the TNT title, and then he dropped it to Brody, which was planned.
Yeah.
I think Cody's made all the right decisions. It's just like I said, it's kind of popular to boo him.
And just like Cena.
And that's what killed this match. Pac, great worker, good Samoof set. Malakai Black, seemingly as dangerous as any wrestler. I can't wait.
I love the gimmick. I thought he was lame as hell as Aleister Black.
And I liked the name Aleister Black. And I was like, I'm not going to like the name Malakai Black. Now I forget about Aleister Black.
Oh, his entrance is one. You were talking about entrances earlier?
His entrance
spooky,
is awesome.
Cool shit.
His quote unquote super kick is awesome.
Yep.
His finisher, it works. It works on every size wrestler.
Yep.
It looks dangerous. And Andre El Idolo, he is awesome. I mean, there were so many parts of this match that should have been good, but they couldn't do a hot tag. They did hot tags when Cody came in to get some fire, but the crowd booed him.
Hated it.
And the ending, which... Not wasn't necessarily a bad ending. It just was a flat ending. With even though it was Pac hitting his amazing finish.
Yeah, the crowd was near.
They weren't in the match.
Yeah.
So this match, I don't even want to dwell on it. It's like a 2.75.
I give it a 3 just because I thought Pac wrestled his ass off.
Pac did. Pac's a great wrestler, man.
I just don't know where you go with these four.
Well, you know where they go? And talking about Jungle Boy, the one thing they could do, and I think would be awesome, is a cruiserweight title. Or a light heavyweight title.
I think they're going to go for 3-man tag belt before that.
That's okay, too. And I was thinking about this. Oh, so many belts. Every Japan promotion has a million belts.
Yep.
And there's never a bad show. Yeah, well, there is, but...
All right, I need to take a time. I'm about to pee my pants.
Okay, go pee. Here, I'll hit the pause. And then come right back. All right, now we're back. I had a false start there for a second. We also, and we're going to go into Throw It to Missy segment at the end. We'll talk about the trailer we just watched, but we just also watched the trailer, the second trailer for No Way Home, I guess was the actually first trailer. The other was a teaser. But anyway, we'll get to that in a little bit. We got three matches left, and we're not going to blow through them fast, but I do want to get through the next two a little more quick than we have, because the last match we're going to spend some time on. But the next match, it's hard to say we're going to shorten this conversation on this match, because I think this was the best match for a great crowd reaction of any match we've seen on the card. Because we heard Eddie Kingston, CM Punk.
Oh, yeah.
Eddie Kingston, CM Punk. And I've been not critical, but Eddie Kingston took a while for me to warm up.
100%.
On. And it's not because of his promos, which are great. It's not because of his character, which is good. It's because of his just look. He looks like the out-of-shape guy that's like Sandman was back in ECW.
He looks broken.
He looks broken. He's got bad knees. But I'm going to tell you, that article that Jay shared with us.
Oh, that Players Tribune article was fantastic.
And this match with CM Punk, which was CM Punk's best match to date in AEW. And in my opinion, Eddie Kingston's best match to date.
Yep.
This was, they fought. And this was a fight.
Street fight, blade job from Punk.
And so, that's interesting you said that, because Missy really focuses on details.
Okay.
She thinks it was a blood capsule. Because... And if you watch the end of it, the blood dries quick, and there's no discernible place where the blood come from.
Huh.
I'd like to see the interwebs talk about it. Because at first I was like, no, there's no self-respecting wrestler that would do that. And then as the match was going, I was just like, she might be right, but I wanted to defy her.
Yeah.
And be defiant against her.
Nobody said either way.
I haven't seen anything. But I think it was. I don't think he bladed himself. I think he blood capsuled himself, which is a... Not a very punk way, but it makes sense on a guy that's like very focused on things outside of the ring.
Some of the blade jobs lately in AEW, now that you mention it, have looked a little goofy. Like the blade job that Hangman took from the camera shot on the Go Home show was a little squirrely. So I could see that, yeah.
Yeah, but...
That crowd was hot, baby.
Hot for this
match. And that was my surprise match.
It's the only reason it wasn't a surprise match for me is because I always expect a good CM Punk match like I do Bryan Danielson. It would be my runner-up because I didn't expect Eddie to be so fucking great in it.
Yeah, and I didn't expect the crowd to be that hot because they were hot.
They love Eddie Kingston, and like I told you in the thread, I think he's the Tommy Dreamer, the ECW era Tommy Dreamer.
Eddie Kingston showed me in that match that he will have a belt at some point.
The hard luck loser... In fact, I hope this happens. I hope he doesn't win the belt the next two or three tries. So when he fucking does win the belt, again, going back to long-form storytelling, for those that don't know, Tommy Dreamer was the hero of ECW. In early real ECW.
Yep.
Real ECW had a lot of violent, over-the-top, bloody characters. And then they had the babyface white meat and Tommy Dreamer, who actually was also violent. But Tommy always saved the day. He always saved the girl. But Tommy always lost the match. More specifically, he always lost the match to... God, why am I blanking on his name now?
Johnny Polo?
Yeah, Johnny Polo. What was his name?
Raven.
Raven. Yeah, Raven. I was Even Flow DDT, man, which is my favorite name for a DDT ever, other than the DDT. But no, he always lost to Raven. In fact, it's famously known that Dreamer never wanted to win the belt. And they finally put a belt on him, and it was fine, but he lost every opportunity he got for like 5 years. And I kind of hope they do that with Eddie. So when the payoff is there, it's going to be a tearjerker.
Well, I guess he's had one title shot, but he was a heel.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think this Punk feud with him continues.
I almost could see it not continuing as a feud, but end up being partners. Because he didn't shake his hand, so they might have another match or two.
Well,
might do a street fight.
I think... All right, so let's kind of delve into this. Are we done talking about this match?
No, we can't. Well, let's give a rating on it too. What was your rating for
4 on this?
I'm going to go 4.25. I loved how hot the crowd was.
I think you have to turn Punk or Danielson heel sooner than later, and I do think Danielson's the one to do it. However,
they're both good at it, man.
A CM Punk taking Kingston behind the woodshed, you know, one of those old school things where he gets the handcuffs out and he's got him tied to the ropes and he's beating him with the chair, and then you hear Wild Thing come out, would be a perfect intro for Moxley.
Yeah.
So I could see something like that happening.
Punk is either Danielson or Punk. Listen, before we get to the final match, the one thing AEW doesn't have a lack of is believable, fun, charismatic, dangerous heels. They got them by the boatload. They don't have a super lot of believable, winnable baby faces, with the exception of maybe, you know, one or two right now. And I'm not shitting on Darby, because Darby's going to be there one day.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I don't think Jungle Boy's going to be there, but I think they think he is. Sammy Guevara is another one. But see, Sammy Guevara could also be an incredibly good heel.
Yeah, Sammy, you know, we'll talk about him a little bit more in
next
a second.
Here,
let's just talk about him now. So the next match I thought was the stinker of the show.
I did too, but I don't think it was anyone's fault that was in the match, like on the Inner Circle side.
I think it's Jericho's fault for having this thing be even a thing.
Yeah, I mean, no, see, I don't even think it's Jericho's the reason it's here. I mean, here's why they're here. Here's why this match is a thing. One, Dan Lambert is probably one of the three or four most successful MMA coaches in all of MMA history. He's not only made a great team for himself, an American Top Team, he's collected a lot of belts. He's made a lot of money in an industry where it's hard to make money and stay relevant. He's also happens to be one of the most giant wrestling fans on the planet, which is why he's been in Ring of Honor and here and TNA Wrestling. He was there. He was, that's actually where he was, not Ring of Honor. And from AEW's perspective, having all those legitimate MMA stars, former champs, brings a little mainstream media. In fact, I listened to a couple of podcasts, MMA podcasts, and they all brought it up this week after it.
Okay.
So that it accomplished what they needed. So that said, I'm with you. It was the worst feud on the worst storyline and probably the worst match on the card. Was it a shitty match? I don't know if it was a shitty match, but it was the worst match on a card that was full of hot matches.
As I told someone, maybe it was you, there's WrestleManias where that would have been the third best match.
Yeah. There's. You didn't tell me that, but I believe you.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
I gave that a 2.5.
I'll go with that. I'll give it a 2.75 because of the nostalgic or the tribute ending.
Yeah. It was, you know, Jericho.
Also, by the way, so we can tell fans, like we got fans. We tell listeners, people that downloaded the show, if they're still here at this point. we tell them, I didn't know this. I'd forgotten this. Not only did I not know that it was in Minneapolis, or I did not remember where Eddie died.
Yeah.
It was the day.
I didn't know
it was the day. We had to Google it.
Okay.
We had to Google it.
I didn't know it was the day. I knew Eddie died in Minneapolis, and I figured that's why they were
so much Eddie stuff. Like, the Luchas, everybody was doing
it.
Ty Conte did it. Everybody was doing an Eddie thing. So I'll give it an extra 7.25 because Jericho was allowed to be Eddie at the end of it.
Yeah.
And he legitimately cried.
Yeah.
Those were real tears from Jericho. The best thing about the match was that part. Let me take it back. Junior DeSantos did a moonsault.
Yeah.
The MMA guys weren't so bad that this deserved a one, but they also weren't so good that it got better than what it did.
Yeah. I don't really need to see any of them either.
To our point, too, and then I'll let you go back to yours, to what we talked about earlier, the best person in the match was Sammy Guevara, another guy that doesn't miss his spots.
Yeah, and, you know, to those who don't know, the four pillars of...
According to MJF,
and according to a lot of people on the internet, MJF didn't come up with that. It's not the Steve Spagnuolo four pillars who make Rams football relevant in 2013. It is Sammy Guevara, MJF, Darby, and Jungle Boy, who are all under 30 and who are independently grown guys.
Yeah.
And
have a chance to be around for a long time.
Yeah. Sammy's probably got the best skill set of. I think Sammy, you could argue Sammy's overall the best of the four.
I will say that I will agree with that. I don't know that it's like head and shoulders above MJF and Darby and. And certainly his size, they're all their sizes above Jungle. And this is a compliment to all of them. He's the best of all of them. It's not like he's the best, he's an A and they're all C's. He's the best and the other ones are B pluses. You know, he's A and they're all B pluses. I mean, Sammy is the one that I easily could see being a champ. Well, MJF's the one I see being a champ first, but that's because of his personality. But
Sammy and Darby the only have
no,
the
I mean
champs.
Like the champ.
Yeah,
but Sammy though is a guy whose moveset is off the charts.
Yeah, yeah, he can wrestle like a luchador, or he can wrestle old school too. I mean, he's
a good looking dude.
He's got his vlog with the kid in glove. He's got a lot going.
Jay, and I wish Jay would have made this episode. I get that he couldn't because he he took the dive after our last episode into all the vlogs. And he said even though he loves Sammy, he doesn't love his vlog as much as the BTE and stuff like that.
Oh, it's not even close.
But he said, but you know, every once in a while, he's got some funny moments.
Yeah, no, it's I watch BTE, which is the Elite's blog, because it also, or vlog, but because it has storylines tied into it too. Yeah. We'll get to that in a second. But Sammy's is starting to a little bit.
Yeah,
Fuego del Sol's whole thing came from Sammy's vlog.
Yeah,
that's more of a fast forward kind of.
Yeah.
And I've tried watching some other ones. It's like, brr. I tried watching Uno's.
So the end of this was, I mean, hopefully this is done. Hopefully Lambert's out. The men of the year, though, Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page, they can be good. They just can't be good with this gimmick. They could be men of the year on their own. They don't need this gimmick. They'll have them feud against the rapping guys and beat them up.
They should feud with Kazarian and Christopher Daniels to bring him back.
They're not going to be a tag team, though.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And they're done. You know, again, this was a great, this was another good. The second notable cooldown match before what we can go ahead and jump into right now, which is the reason we turned into this pay-per-view to begin with. 2-year storytelling, old school wrestling at its best. Hangman Adam Page, cowboy shit himself against the cleaner. Big match?
The best bout machine.
Best bout machine. Not from North Carolina. Kenny Omega, who for years has been considered the best worker on the planet.
I mean, did you hear how beat up he was in this?
After our text thread.
Yeah.
He Shawn Michaels this match. Shawn Michaels versus Steve Austin with Mike Tyson, most notably one of the biggest moments in the history of pro wrestling. But Shawn Michaels had two herniated discs. Actually, had a herniated disc going in, and he herniated one during the match. And you could see him when he was picking Austin up, he couldn't bend over. So Kenny Omega went into this match with a bump shoulder, vertigo.
Yeah,
which I don't know about if I buy that one.
I watched the thing where he talked about it. It seemed pretty believable that he's had it for about 3 years now. Where
how does he? I don't know. So I worked with the person with vertigo once, so much so that she couldn't sit on her stool; it was too high.
Yeah.
He jumps off the top rope like it's nothing.
Yeah.
People in different ways.
Yeah, I don't know if it's intermittent and that's where he's like got to cool down, let somebody else take a tag
match.
It
could be as easy as saying Simone Biles did. He might have the twisties. Like, he might get lost because of the vertigo and certain things.
I mean, all last year he was in tag teams.
But let's talk about this match, though.
So, I mean,
the best heel in AEW. Well, I'll say this. Without the Hangman storyline, I think Kenny's been a little stagnant on TV and stuff of late.
He didn't
have a good feud.
He's a bad heel.
I don't think he's a bad heel. I don't know that it was a great gimmick with Don.
Yeah, I think it's a good gimmick. I mean, it's basically Ric Flair.
And I don't know that they brought him up some legitimate good stories. Jon Moxley was a good one.
Yeah.
He overcome it.
But he was more tweener when he did that.
Yeah, absolutely.
He was trying.
Well, he was starting. That's when he turned.
Yeah, and he was kind of doing a Ric Flair comedy, cowardly heel thing, which I think that after this, the Elite will turn on him tomorrow night. We are recording this on Tuesday. Wednesday.
I don't know that
And then he's going to take some time off.
They may not. Yeah, I mean, you think they're going to bring him out and they'll turn on him, or you think, you're probably right. That's the rumor mill. That's the dirt sheets.
Yeah.
So he was the heel. He went into a match with Hangman Adam Page. And let's do this. Let's do something rare. Let's just rate this up front, and then let's tell why. This was a 5 out of 5.
4.5 out of 5.
Really?
Me. I mean, because, look, the storytelling and all that was great. I got a knock and a half to no fault of his own, but you could tell Kenny was banged up in that match. There wasn't a lot of, oh, my God, heart-stopping spots.
Oh, I can tell you this. You're a jaded wrestling fan because I watched it with someone who isn't a wrestling fan, and there was a million of those for her.
Yeah.
What did
Missy think of the match?
She thought it was great. And she thought when he won and me and Jay were so into the win, she was like, oh my God, finally. One, she goes, finally, because they were so close. There were such a good moments. She thought it was good, and she really got behind Hangman Adam Page as a good guy.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I shouldn't take a full half point off of that. Maybe 0.25 for Kenny being banged up. And 0.25, like, I had my buddy who I mentioned was like, I don't know if Hangman's going to win. There's a lot of faces winning tonight. I'm a little nervous. Like, Tony Khan is not that dumb. It would have been catastrophic if Kenny had won.
Send him home happy.
Yeah. Send him home happy, pal. But, you know, I guess just to tell my story with this, look, you know, Jeremy and I have mentioned since the beginning of me being on the show how we've been wrestling fans for our childhood. And wrestling is like anything that when you're a kid, you always have the love for it, but there are times where the love is fleeting, and it comes and goes. For me personally, I was a wrestling fan during the Hulk years. I cried like a little baby when he lost to Ultimate Warrior. When everybody else thought the Warrior was cool, I was not that kid. And then I kind of fell out of wrestling when it kind of got hokey between WrestleMania 8 and WrestleMania 13. And then Austin came. And then the Monday Night Wars came. And I was in high school. I think you were probably in college.
Yep.
And wrestling was cool again. Like, you could walk around in a 316 shirt or an you NWO shirt.
Yeah, NWO.
You were not getting made fun of. Everybody was into it. Right. And so...
Or ECF and W. You had three options. Oh, yeah. You know?
It was fantastic. And then, unfortunately, WCW kind of went by the wayside, and WWE bought everything.
Well, and there, let's call it what it is, too. There was a little bit of a lull, and then there was a very good era with not just the attitude, but like so the edge. And I poo-pooed on it and thing, but looking back, the Rated R Superstar era and that... The attitude era, what was it called next? Like the Ruthless Aggression era. The early Cena era was still pretty good.
I mean, looking back, the whole Cena era was pretty good.
Yeah, he legitimately had the greatest run in the history of pro wrestling.
Yeah.
There's no ifs, ands, or buts. And if you want to know if that's accurate, listen to Jericho, listen to Steve Austin, listen to The Rock. John Cena had the greatest run in the history of pro wrestling.
And then when Cena left, the thing with the Cena era, Ruthless Aggression era, at least for me, and you can disagree or agree, was while the top of the card was interesting and fun, the middle and lower card started getting sillier and sillier.
Yeah, well,
and
the top of the card for me, well, that was when I tuned out.
Okay.
I tuned back into WWE, really in the last couple years. And yeah, I've had the Fallen Flag and an OJ run, so whatever is not a Fallen Flag and not an OJ run, I'll take that one right there. So for me, I still haven't, and the only reason I've jumped back into WWE again now is right before AEW popped up was because of AJ Styles and even The Miz. I think The Miz is a good character.
The Miz is underrated.
Yeah, had good run also.
Well, I mean, I'll even kind of go back a little bit. When Impact did that very short Monday Night War, I watched Impact that night.
See, I never got into
it. And
Impact.
I watched it for an hour. I'm like, this is fucking horrible. And so, as wrestling started to wane, I had kids, and Raw got sillier and sillier. I was out for about a year or two, and then I heard about AEW.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched the first Dynamite. I'm like, hell, it's Chris Jericho, and... I don't know.
From the press conference.
I was in that early, but oh, I know Cody. Oh, I've heard of the Bucks. I've seen a couple of their matches on YouTube over the years.
So
I know who Kenny is. I've watched him in Okada matches. I was in, and I have not missed a Dynamite since.
So I'll tell you what helped me.
Okay.
And I was talking about this, and then we're going to get back to this match, and then we'll go into throw it to Missy, and we promise we're going to ease your pain, people.
For all five of you listening.
Go
the distance.
You are going the distance if you're in on this episode. So what happened for me was a little thing called the El Rey Network.
Okay.
And it was called Robert Rodriguez's Lucha Underground.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Robert Rodriguez did a wrestling promotion on El Rey Network, which was
best known for his directing Desperado. Yeah,
Desperado.
Couldn't mend his fences with a gun.
Shark Boy, Lava Girl, or whatever all those was.
Is that his second best movie?
No. He's done so many kids movies. I mean, he's and adult movies. He's quietly had a heck of a career. El Mariachi trilogy, which was Desperado. But anyway, Robert Rodriguez, who's a very well known actor, also or director, had his own network. COVID killed it. They couldn't survive going into that. But it was called the El Rey Network, and it was a Hispanic
leaning network. So they had a wrestling promotion called Lucha Underground. And the good thing about theirs was they were Forbidden Door before there was Forbidden Door. People could come and go as they pleased, but what he did is he would pull everybody in and they would wrestle and film for like 16 weeks, and that was a season. And then they took a, you know, 4 or 5 months off, and then they'd come back with a new season. Well, in season two, they had this little this guy named Penta El Mazon, which is now Penta El whatever he is, and
yeah.
or Pentagon. He was yeah. Pentagon in Lucha Underground. Pentagon was the ultimate heel. He was breaking everyone's arms with this move, and he kept breaking them and sacrificing them to his master. And they had this whole story, and again, long form storytelling. And since Robert Rodriguez had a hand in writing, he was very much telling a story in three parts over 16 episodes. Vampiro was an announcer for them. Vampiro is, I never got behind him, not because I didn't think he was good or anything, just I never caught when he was in his heyday. Vampiro, by all accounts, is a very guy that never got his fair shake because he was a great in-ring talent and a good character and really worked the gimmick. He was an announcer for Lucha Underground. So he was talking about how despicable it was that this piece of shit was going around breaking. So he's like, I'm coming out of retirement and I'm going to beat this asshole. And they had one of the greatest street fight matches of all time. And at the end of the match, when Penta won, Vampiro picked up the mic and said, no, this is not what we talked about. And Penta turned around and he goes, it is not complete until you beat me. He was his master the whole time, and he laid down and made him break his arm.
Wow.
And I was like, this is good. And this is why I'm a big Lucha Brother fan, yeah. because Penta, who is awesome, I love Penta's mask. I love everything about Penta and Rey. And I was like, so when they announced what the early guys on when the AEW was started, and they showed Penta, and they changed his name, obviously, but I was like, oh, boy. I don't care what it is. I'm at least going to give it a shot. And then when the first Dynamite happened, I was like, this is wrestling.
Yeah.
This is what I missed. So I'm with you. To go back, now you go back and talk
so
about.
I watched Dynamite and I enjoyed it and went for the ride. And so, you know, I went to the Kansas City show where Pac and Kenny Omega wrestled a 30-minute Broadway, which was the best match I've seen live. It was fantastic.
And to your point earlier, when that match we were talking about, Pac is a fucking great wrestler.
Oh.
And him and Kenny, they've got some unfinished business because they can work a 5-6 series match and be amazing.
Oh, my God. It was fantastic. And, you know, the Bucks and then, you know, Kenny tag teams with this guy, Hangman Page, who I have no idea who this guy is. And I got furloughed from my job, so I was out of work for 4 months. So I started watching BTE from the beginning and getting to know Hangman, the anxious millennial cowboy. And if you're interested in Hangman's story, if you're with us this long, like, who the fuck is Hangman Page and why does the Silver Badger care about this guy? Somebody has edited basically a TV series from the last 2 years called The Good, The Bad, and The Elite, which will take you all the way back to Hangman's story when he joined the company and how he was in the Elite, and the Elite was Omega and Cody.
Yeah, and for those that don't know, the Elite were the guys that essentially were with Tony Khan. Tony Khan charged these guys. He made them all EVPs, which I think Cody's the last one that's an EVP. And he said, I want to do this. I need you guys. And these guys were all stars in smaller shows, Japan.
Yep.
And when I say stars, Kenny Omega was an unbelievable star in Japan. And Hangman and all these guys were big around the world, and they were best friends. And to you, what you were saying, it was Hangman, it was the Bucks, it was Omega, and it was Cody. They're all best friends. They're the Elite, and they got this show off the ground. The first call they made and the first signing they made was Chris Jericho, and Chris Jericho was their first champ, which made sense because Jericho, as much as some people may argue with, there is no doubt that if you look at the upper echelon of greatest pro wrestlers of all time, there's a Mount Rushmore. Jericho's worked his way onto that Mount Rushmore.
Mm.
He's that good.
I love Chris Jericho's on my personal Mount Rushmore, no question.
And the reason I say that is because Austin and all the other wrestlers I listen to on podcast stuff say Jericho's that good.
He's a top 10 wrestler of all time. I don't know if he's on Mount Rushmore level because he was never the guy. But that's a whole different.
But he has been the guy, just not in the WWE. Well, actually, go back.
Do you think Jericho's ever drawn money?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Jericho was the first. He unified the belts in WWE.
Yeah, and how quickly did they take it off him?
Not that quick. It wasn't that quick.
He's bitched about it a lot.
He beat The Rock, Austin, in the same night.
He did.
They trusted Jericho.
Well, yeah, he is a wrestler's probably Mount Rushmore. But as far as...
He deserves to be on the Mount Rushmore. Yeah, well, and that's what I
said. And look, we love Jericho.
See,
so
I go by what the wrestlers say. Sure. And they love... And his brain. His brain is as good as anybody has ever been. And the fact that he worked a concussed, blacked out Bubba Ray from a match off of a ladder fall and got him to finish the match.
I love... as I mentioned, the Puck Soup, where they have one of the hosts who's a... as dirty of a liberal as Bender is, he once said... I know Chris Jericho's politics, and you know my politics, and Chris Jericho's so good, I don't even give a fuck.
Yeah, he's that good. But anyway, back to
anyway,
your story.
So anyway, so I got to get into Hangman's character. I mean, the faces like Stone Cold and Hulk Hogan were always badasses, but in this day and age, not to be,
Look, Hangman can go. I'm not giving you crap, but you saw something.
I saw myself in Hangman.
Exactly. You saw something that somebody related to.
Somebody who had self-doubt. Somebody who's struggled. Somebody who's dealt with.
That may shock people because they only hear the Silver Badger. They don't know Thomas Hummel.
Yes. The
Thomas Jane Hummel for this podcast.
I mean, that's what you want in wrestling, right? You want somebody or music or any kind of art form
that make moves you. Yeah,
that's what makes art. It's something that moves you and inspires you. And when him and Kenny fought the Bucks, it was, you know, they considered the best tag match of all time. And I've watched that match several times. The psychology is
insane. Think it's a great. My favorite tag match of all time, obviously, because I'm a homer for the Lucha Brothers, was the Lucha Brothers Young Bucks in the cage. But they're great for different reasons.
They're great.
One was a spectacle. The other was a great worked wrestling match.
And then,
which I didn't think the Bucks were capable of doing until that match.
Sure. Yeah.
So they won the tag titles. They were the first tag champ, or not the first.
They were the second.
They were second.
They beat SCU, and then they had the belts, and they lost them to FTR. And we won't go into the whole story if you're interested in it. Really watch that YouTube series, The Good, the Bad, the Elite. And it's a two... I mean, WWE can't do a three-month storyline.
Dude, that's exaggerating. They can't do a three-week storyline at this point.
After Hangman beat Kenny, Tony Khan was in the media scrum saying, yeah, this is the plan day one. That we would wait. I think they wanted to do it at All Out, but then he had his baby. Yep. Hangman, and so they delayed.
Which helped. It helped.
It helped a little
because
bit.
Because he came back as the Joker and was amazing.
Hangman he's got it. I would say of the wrestlers in my lifetime, The Rock, Stone Cold, Jericho, Hogan, and Hangman just have it. His promos when he wants to do them are simple, to the point.
CM Punk. CM Punk. They can do subtle things and say they can sometimes not say anything and work it.
Yeah. So
The Rock can come out and not say a word and sell a match.
Yeah.
Or sell a pay-per-view. You know, I mean, and Hangman.
He can do comedy. He can be serious, like, I'm going to whoop this guy's ass and do some cowboy shit. That crowd. Go ahead.
Well, let's also say, too, he's got a good look.
He does.
For those that don't know, if you want a comparable look, he's a built version of one of the Duttons, Casey from Yellowstone. Put a pin in cat that.
If you don't know that reference, I've never watched Yellowstone, although I need to. He reminds me, if you took Robert Plant in his sexy heyday and mixed it with Stone Cold.
Yeah, yeah. So he looks like a cowboy. He's
long, blonde, curly hair, and he speaks with a drawl. So he can fucking go. I
mean, not only does he have the look, not only does he have the charisma that you talked about, but he's got a very unique moveset, and he's got a really fun finish.
Yes.
A really fun finish.
Yes.
The
buckshot.
The buckshot lariat.
Which is
For those that don't know, lariat is essentially... It's, in my opinion, the second greatest clothesline in pro wrestling.
For the clothesline from hell.
The clothesline from hell is number one, and number three is the Steiner liner.
Yeah.
But those are the three greatest clotheslines. But There's no topping the clothesline from hell.
Oh, that thing was brutal. Because
I feel like he actually did knock people unconscious.
Yeah.
The buckshot lariat, if you're just a casual wrestling fan or not even a big wrestling fan, he's on the outside of the apron. He uses the top rope to springboard him or to catapult himself in a flip over and then just decapitates the person.
Yeah.
It's a great move. It's visually an incredibly fun move.
It looks like it hurts like hell.
Also, much like I talked about Malachi Black and some other things, it's very important for a guy that is not the size of a Kevin Nash or an Ultimate Warrior or a Hulk Hogan even to be able to do a move that's believable on anybody. And the buckshot lariat can be done on anybody.
Yeah.
The one-winged angel can't be done on anybody, but the workaround for that was he's got the V-trigger.
He's got the V-trigger. I would also say
he
that...
He has 167,000 moves, too, which is okay.
But I've also seen, for bigger guys, he's dead-shotted him.
Mm-hmm.
Or red-eyed him.
Yeah, he's got his moveset. Yeah, Kenny Omega we're talking about. Yeah.
Well,
I'm talking about the one-winged angel.
But Hangman is red-eyed guy.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's going to be big guys, and AEW doesn't have this problem right now, but, you know, certainly in the WWE-style booking, sometimes guys are just too big that you can't put your finisher on them.
I'm trying to
Ultimate
remember
Warrior how could how not did, gorilla press Andre the Giant.
I'm trying to remember how Hangman has beaten Cage, Hobbs, and Wardlow. Did he buckshot him or did he dead-eye him? He's dead-eyed a couple of them.
I don't know, but we're going to get back to the Wardlow Page thing here in a little bit.
Yeah, so Hangman, his storyline is he gets kicked out of the Elite, he's by himself, he's drinking, he finds these guys called the Dark Order who...
Well, they found him.
They found him, and it's about friendship. There, in times in your life, I'm sure you've had the same thing, Jeremy, where you are in a group of friends and things go sideways and that group of friends, you leave or they leave you and then you find a new group.
No one leaves my friendship.
Yet.
Just know that. No one leaves my friendship. Alive. No, just kidding. No, I know what you're saying. No, I absolutely know what you're saying.
Yeah, it's just very relatable how they picked him up. They believed in him. He believed in himself. And,
yeah, it was a great storytelling.
Fantastic.
The reason people love wrestling is because of the storytelling. People will tell you it's all this stuff, but it's really, you know, back where wrestling became popular was Hulk Hogan, and the storytelling was great there. Hulk Hogan was always, you always felt like the odds were against Hulk Hogan, and he always prevailed. And they would, you know, and I've been saying the phrase old school storytelling with this match forever because most great stories with wrestling and we don't have to do it here, but we could put the greatest feuds of all time. McMahon Austin.
Yeah.
Bret Hart Austin. Probably the best one. Bret Hart Austin, the double turn, one of the greatest moments in all of pro wrestling history.
Yeah.
The Rock Austin. I mean, he had a lot.
Hogan Macho.
You talk about long form storytelling, that was a really long one.
Is that the best? Just kind of off the top
it's
of
the greatest
head.
Angle, according to Bruce Pritchard. The greatest angle in the history of pro wrestling is the...
It probably is. In WWE, it might be.
There's no doubt. It's good. Dreamer Raven. Sting, you know, Flair. I mean, there's been Flair Rhodes. There's been so many great ones.
Those are all rivalries that we remember. This is a story about one individual who...
No, but they were rivalries because... They took the time to build it over the... Some of those you didn't even notice that were, like, being told over, like, 2-3 years. You didn't even notice it. Like, The Rock, Scott Hall. They had a couple matches here and there over a few years. And then they had this intercontinental match where The Rock finally won after, like, three... It's like, oh, quietly, these guys have had, like, 7 matches over 2-3 years in this feud. That's a great angle. So what?
But is that an angle, or is that something they're just like, oh, shit, where?
No, that was still angle, because that was back when old Freddie Prinze Jr. was still there, and he was still writing stuff. And, you know, they were really invested in drawing these guys out. That's not done in wrestling anymore, and that's what we mean.
In that company.
Well, yeah. Well, it's not been done in a lot of companies. Japan doesn't do stories as much as, you know, America does. America does. But what we loved about Wrestler, to my point, was these stories, how they built these guys. AEW from day one was like, we're going to book stories. And it's working.
I mean,
and it, no better example of it working was this match.
And the details, if you watch this show that I talk, I mean, it's a YouTube thing that some guy just put together. That Hangman even mentioned, like, yeah, I either need to sue this guy for copyright or like give him tickets to a show.
Oh, no, that was we're going to talk about where he said that. Why he said that.
But like, something like Kenny Omega on his Twitter banner has had for 2 years a picture of Jericho, Moxley, Kenny, and Hangman.
Yeah, guys, he's beat.
No.
Oh.
The four champions in order.
Oh, four champions in order. Yeah. Oh, okay, so he's been telling the story. Oh, yeah. Himself.
I mean, there's just so many little things like that that they've done that it's just, I give in.
They paid attention to the details.
Yeah, the one thing I didn't like about this whole week was, and I get it, but there was a lot of interviews this week because AEW is doing a lot of press to try to get people
to buy in, and
Hangman is going to have to carry the torch, and hopefully he succeeds. But I get it. Kayfabe doesn't exist anymore. But the Bucks did two separate interviews where they were like, yeah, Hangman deserves this moment, and, you know, which blah, blah,
that,
blah, blah.
But they even had to pay off on the show with that.
They had to pay off on the show, but, yeah, okay. Like,
yeah.
Just shut the fuck up for 1 week.
Well, so.
When I read the one in Sports Illustrated, any doubt that I had, which was very little, I'm like, well, he's definitely winning now.
So. To your point, you said something interesting a while ago, and I'm going to disagree with you, but not for the reasons that you think I'm disagreeing with you. I'm not arguing that Hangman's not capable it's not an important position to being the title holder. But I don't think he has to carry the banner for AEW because AEW has done a good job of developing mid-card talent, low-card talent. They've got the CM Punks of the world that garner a lot of mainstream attention. They've got Bryan Danielson, who's now going to wrestle Hangman Adam Page, which let's get back to the match in a second. They got enough talent like the Attitude Era. Obviously, the Attitude Era is always going to be known for Stone Cold. Stone Cold, the pinnacle that Stone Cold was on when he was at the top is almost too high for anyone ever to achieve. He was the most popular wrestler in the history of wrestling when he was up. Now, he was a bright flare. Like a signal flare, he burnt out quick, and he didn't have a long run on top. But when he was on top, it was the most up anyone's ever been.
I mean, what was his up? 2 years?
Yeah, I mean, he even talks about it. I only had a 7-year run, and I was only on top for 2-3 years of that. For one reason, he broke his neck, and then he had to build back up to it. But when he was on top, Stone Cold was. But to that said, though, but even when Stone Cold was on top, The Rock was mid-card, and there was a lot of talent. Jericho was coming over. All those guys were coming over. So AEW is in that right now. They have Hangman, who can be the face of the company, and he can do a damn good job of it. But he doesn't have to worry about going out and working a great match every fucking time. They can put him in a... In fact, I'd like to see him with Bryan Danielson. I'd like to see the old school gimmick of making them team up against the Elite for a little bit, maybe something like that.
Yeah, it'd be interesting what they do.
Yeah, but
how long do you keep the belt on him?
Hangman, they have to keep it on him for a while. They have to let him defend it 3 or 4 guys.
Okay.
Because it's all for nothing if you let him drop it. He's not going to drop it to Bryan Danielson.
No, I agree.
In fact, I think beating Bryan Danielson will turn Danielson heel. You'll see some aftermatch. They're going to have a fucking great match.
Yeah.
And you're going to see him turn, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Hopefully MJF takes him down about a year from now.
You know, again, long-form storytelling. I hope MJF has a great run as a TNT champ.
Yeah.
Maybe a title for title at some point or something like that. Yeah. I would like to see MJF have a honky tonk man type run in Intercontinental title. Just he keeps just fucking keeping it and keeping it and keeping it and keeping it.
That'd be fun.
And just it frustrates people because he's so good at a heel.
And one thing AEW does so well is they keep the titles on people. So when it's a change, it's significant. I mean, we had a huge pay per view, only one title change. It seems to be per pay per view only one title change.
Yeah, yeah, and that's big. Yeah, that's big. So the match itself, the ending saw a couple of things of note.
Yep.
One, it was two buckshot lariats before you hit one in the back, one in the front. So it was a double buckshot to put Kenny away, which really sold Kenny as
tough.
Yeah, a tough dude. two, one thing that you and I have been predicting from day one did not happen. Adam Page did not kick out of the One-Winged Angel.
He did not.
Kenny Omega kicked out of a One-Winged Angel from Adam Page, which is okay because you can always say, well, it's not Adam Page's, or it's not Omega's One-Winged Angel.
No, of course.
So we
Well, Omega's also given gave a One-Winged Angel in that tag match against the Bucks.
Yes.
Yeah, and yeah. One of the Jacksons kicked out. I can't remember which one.
Did he get kicked out? Did he kick out or did he get saved?
I can't remember.
I don't think he kicked out. No one's ever kicked out of it. I don't believe anyone's ever, at least in a singles match, no one's ever kicked out of the One-Winged Angel.
Ibushi kicked out of it.
Did he?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll go to another name, and I'm going to talk about here in the afterword of this.
Oh, he's coming.
Who?
The Rainmaker.
Well, we're going to talk about that then. It's the most, right now, it's the most protected move in in all of pro wrestling. Second most protected move, by the way, Britt Baker. That's a pretty well protected move.
I mean, One Winged Angel is up there, top five protected move of all time.
Oh, certainly.
I mean, you got Razor's Edge. You may ever kick out of that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, but so you have to keep in mind, too, though, what makes a move super protected is no one else is using it also.
True.
The DDT was unbelievable until everyone and their brother started doing the DDT. A lot of people, there's even an edge. Somebody's doing an edge in Eagle's Edge. Ethan Page is doing an Eagle's Edge. And they can kick out of that. But no one else is doing the One-Winged Angel.
Yeah, sweet move.
Yeah, it's a good, great move. And Kenny's sneaky strong because he puts big guys in it.
Yep.
But the ending was awesome. It was an awesome match. Don Callis, who's someone I'm not a fan of, and I know everybody's going to say, well, he's a heel. You're not supposed to like him. I know, but he's annoying even as a guy that I'm not supposed to. There's heels that have been great and annoying that I've still done. I just don't like Don Callis.
He's all right. I think he's great
without him. I think the Elite was enough to not need Don Callis. And,
I think Don Callis served his purpose to get Kenny over as a heel, but
I hope he's done now.
Well, Kenny should be a face now. When he comes back,
he's either a face or he's a new rival faction with the Good Brothers, and we'll see.
Oh, please no.
Yeah, I know. I'm with you. but we'll see. We'll see what happens. So the match itself, though, you gave it a 4.75.
Yep.
I gave it a 5. It was a great moment. Let's talk about the post match. Your boys came out.
It came out, and I got teared up.
Suspiciously absent from the rest of the pay-per-view.
Well, yeah, the Dark Order. And they came out, and they offer Hangman a beer. He slaps it away and goes for a hug, and that got me a little bit. That was pretty fucking cool. So the Dark, it's a wholesome friendship. I mean, I don't know where you go with the Dark Order from here. I really don't.
The Dark Order's almost done. Without Brody, and I even thought with Brody, I don't think Brody needed him.
It worked at first.
But the comic relief of them wears thin eventually. Almost like the Blue World Order, mm-hmm. And it's also a disservice to how good some of the wrestlers in the Dark Order is.
Yeah.
Silver.
Oh, love him.
Fucking great, right? He's another guy that needs to develop a little bit of personality on the mic. But
he has it on BTE.
Yeah, he's got to learn to bring it.
Well, they're learning. Yeah, they gave him a chance the other night.
And he failed. And it's not his fault. It's hard. It's really hard. Yeah. That's why they teach classes at these training facilities.
Yeah, it's easy to do it when you have multiple takes on a YouTube show, but when you have to do it live one time, Johnny.
Him in ring is really good.
Yes, he's.
He's got a good gimmick. He's the muscular little guy, he's the super strong. Really small guy.
Yeah,
and you can work that again if they come up with a cruiserweight title. Him and Jungle Boy could put on some fucking 5-star matches.
I would love to see him and MJF.
Would be fun. But anyway, let's talk about post match stuff. Let's talk about after match stuff. And that's the card. Overall, let's give a full rating to the card.
4.75.
I'm going to say it's not a 5. I'm going to say the only reason it's not a 5 is because the previous card to me was a 5 just because of the shock value. This was a 4.75, but this was the exactly card you needed.
I have gotten I've watched so many WWE pay-per-views in the last 10 years with so many wasted matches and blah. Dude. I mean, are you going to Rumble?
I will go. Did you? Are you going? We talked about it. You said, should we go?
I bought four tickets. I can't remember if you're in that.
You asked me. I'll pay for a ticket. I'll go to the Rumble. When is it?
I think they're spoken for.
Oh, well, then I'm probably not going.
It's the last Saturday in January.
Would you tell me if I'm going?
All right.
I will go with you. I'm not going by myself. All right, like, Hayden doesn't care about that, so.
I feel dirty going because WWE is so garbage, but it's the Rumble, and the Dome. Fun. And the Dome,
too. Yeah, and the Rumble's. Yeah, they're also going to pack that place.
And I got club seats, so.
Yeah. Anyway, as a whole, the pay-per-view, 475, we both agree. Let's talk about a couple of things after. One, Cowboy Shit, National Cowboy Shit Day.
Hilarious.
Was hilarious. He released a press statement talking about national when it, and it was to be released sometime after the next Be in the Elite, which was hilarious. He thanked that guy, said, I don't know whether to sue him or buy him tickets. He talked about one thing he said that was funny. He goes, I'll literally face any challenger except for Wardlow. I don't want to fight his big man tits
that was
again.
Great.
Cowboy is leaning into it, and it's good. Now, we talked about his next challenger. Is in fact going to be Bryan Danielson, which is going to be an amazing match. Let's hope it turns Danielson heel, but I don't want to focus on that. Instead, I want to focus on, I told you earlier, and I told everyone earlier, that it's been recognized for the last handful of years, Kenny Omega's been the greatest worker on the planet. And that's true, but it's not completely true. There was one guy out there that's been considered the most dangerous, and he might have an argument to be said about our clothesline conversation we had a while ago.
Okay.
And that's Okada.
Yeah.
The Rainmaker.
Mm-hmm.
Which I did have a good COVID year and the year before of watching New Japan. Okada's fucking amazing.
Yep.
Okada and Kenny have had a series of 10 matches. Something like that?
Well, it's the three big ones.
The three big... And Okada is on top of those matches.
He won the first two, right?
Yeah. Their sixth match, which I think was their third one, is considered their best. The one Kenny won is considered their best match. But their matches are unbelievable. V-Triggers. Clothesline. The Rainmaker clothesline, which is...
Yeah.
Great move. That's the one guy that the forbidden door is not going to be just kicked open, that he's just going to knock the wall down because he's too big to come through. He's arguably the biggest star in Japan.
And he's got, I guess, a group called Chaos?
Yeah, he's got a clique.
Which I guess the best friends are now involved in?
Which is awesome. Because they already don't like the Elite.
Yep.
Yeah. I got to tell you, there's two names that I want. And we talked about this earlier. We talked about three free agents coming from all these other promotions.
Yep.
But if it were me, I would sacrifice all those names to have Okada and Switchblade Jay White come over. Those are the two I want to see.
Maybe you know. Do you remember when, like, I think it was Kenny versus Rick Swan for the Impact title?
Yeah,
and then, like, Jay White showed up. And then, like, did anything ever happen with that?
I don't know. No.
I don't think anything ever did.
No, and I'll tell you this. For those that don't know Jay White, you talk about great storytelling. Japan's bad at storytelling. But they gave Jay White, because they do these things where it's like a season where
he's
you get points.
He's a leader of the Bullet Club, right?
Yeah, he is now. Yeah, and the Bullet Club needs to make an American appearance in the right way. There's been this Bullet Club members. Finn Balor has the Balor Club. There's, for those that don't know, the Bullet Club is Japan's version of the NWO, only they've done it better.
Yep.
It's long-standing. There's been Samoans in it. There's been all kinds of things. And it was essentially an American faction.
They've always... I guess what makes the Bullet Club better than NWO is the NWO just like got fatter and fatter. And then they kind of did the Wolf Pack, but then they brought it back. NWO or Bullet Club's always kind of kept it to active members at any given time. No more than, what, 10?
Yeah, but... And
they... kick people out all the time.
Yeah, they do.
Who are the two brothers who've been there forever? The Briscoes?
Yes.
They've been there forever.
Well, the Briscoes, we're going to see if they go anywhere. I mean, they've been the best tag team to never wrestle in AEW, WWE.
They're my age, aren't they?
They're up there. But I tell you what, they're fucking good wrestlers.
Yeah.
They've had some great match. Yeah, them and the Bucks have had the most long... I mean, in fact, they're the greatest feud the Bucks have ever had was the Briscoes.
I don't know. I mean, the Bucks have had great, with the Lucha Brothers with...
Well, and that's, so I would argue the Lucha Brothers are the second best feud. The Briscoes and Bucks have wrestled probably 35 times for a title at different organizations. The Briscoes, though, their politics are going to keep them off of American TV. They're very outspoken, very, not just pro-Trump, but pro-Trump with a bullet, you know? They on Twitter, they're like, you know, they'll say libtards and things of that nature. So it's going to be hard.
Gotcha.
That's what's keeping... Same way, you know, the best female wrestler we're never going to see is Tessa Blanchard. She's an unbelievably good wrestler. She beat men in Impact.
Where is she now?
Unhireable because she's considered a bully and a cancer. And she's also one of those girls getting legitimately beat up girls, and she let girls know it in the back room.
Yeah.
Charlotte Flair may be going down that road.
I don't want her coming to AEW. I know it's coming at some point, though.
Yeah, it's hard to tell whether where real life and fake life hits with wrestling, but Becky Lynch is not a fan of her.
Nope.
And she's outspoken about it.
Yeah, you don't know what to work or shoot these days. But
there is legitimate heat there somewhere. Yes. But anyway, so those are the... Jay White, who he started as kind of like a quote-unquote mid-carder in Japan, and worked his way up through their point system and stuff, and then ended up becoming a big deal. And here's what Jay White is. He's a Darby Allin or Sammy Guevara with size. He's got a move set. He's big enough to be believable as a heavyweight champion. He's the leader. He's charismatic.
He's what, 5'11"?
Yeah, but he's a solid guy.
He's like AJ Styles size.
He's a little bigger than AJ Styles. I'll look him up while we're talking.
Okay.
But
I don't know much about him. I've seen him a couple times. I've seen him in like clips. I've never seen him wrestle a full match.
He's from New Zealand, so he is, you know, he's 6'1", 220 pounds. He's good size guy.
That's Hangman size.
Yeah, that's a good size guy.
And, well, AJ's always bigger than I think, too.
Yeah. But just a great set of moves. Great. You know, again, another guy that could be better in AEW than he is in WWE. We've been drinking a little bit, but Asian wrestler, amazing wrestler, but just continually gets a screw job in WWE.
Oh, Nakamura?
Nakamura, yeah. Another guy that's had great Kenny matches and Okada matches. But Jay White, Nakamura, Shinsuke Nakamura.
Yep.
They to me are like, they both move very charismatic. They move different.
Okay.
And they're good storytellers. And then Okada is the complete opposite of Jay White. Okada's a force of nature.
Yeah.
He does it. He's a guy that when his promos are good, but they're good in a way that who would be the most comparable guy to him? Not like a Vader, but a guy that's like, Okada just comes out, doesn't threaten people, just says, I'm going to beat you up, and that's what he goes and does.
Yeah.
He's no bullshit. He's dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, and God, man, that would be so fun. But that's all I want.
I would love Okada over.
My God.
And you got to bring Ibushi over at some point for Kenny.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
We'll see how the American audience does with the Golden Lovers.
Yeah. That would be... Dude, that would be... And he's... They'll do great. Because when they wrestled, they did those New Japan pay-per-views here. Before COVID and all that, he was over here.
Absolutely.
Before we get off of wrestling, let's do a quick throw to Missy. I will say, what's that wrestling I've been watching on? It's been on TV. It's been on Axis. Or not Axis. It's been on Vice every once in a while after Dark Side of the Ring. What's that company? I've been watching them. It's pretty fun.
Major League Wrestling?
Yeah. It's been pretty fun.
Yeah, they get a lot of good...
They're like a low level ECW at this point.
Yeah,
but it's worth watching. Record it, watch it. It's good.
All right, I will do that. I've watched a little NWA here and there of Nick Aldis. I think he would be fun to bring in through the Fort.
I would like to go see NWA here if they come back. When they come back, they'll come back because I got the
pay per view.
I heard the interviews.
It was all right.
It was okay, but I don't want to buy the pay per view. I'll pay tickets to go see the show, but I'm not going to buy the pay per view. If that makes sense.
Single or not, little kid me would have been all over that.
I listened to the interviews with Billy Corgan. He means well. He passionately loves it. He loved St. Louis for NWA. You even heard JR talk about it. He sold St. Louis. I think
that show is a success.
Yeah, and JR when AEW's here, they was like, this is the great wrestling history. This town.
Wrestling town.
Yeah. So I'll go see it, but I just I don't have a I will never buy the pay per view.
I think we'll get a pay per view for AEW next year. I mean, that was what was cool at the Rampage, where Tony Khan came out off camera, just on his knees, literally apologizing for us getting screwed over.
I like Tony Khan so far.
He's an interesting cat.
I hope he doesn't fall the wayside of Vince, where he gets a lot of power. But I like right now.
Well, I think Tony Khan is a genuinely good person, where Vince is not.
Right, right.
Tony Khan may be a coke addict. By
he
the way,
he could be. He's also super rich. His dad's even more rich.
Yeah.
But let's enough wrestling. That's
thank
the whole
you for
episode.
Sticking with us.
Yeah, thanks for let's if you fast forward to anything, I'll even tell you in the intro, you can fast forward to the Throw It to Missy segment, which is inappropriately titled since she's no longer part of the podcast. You got any quick hits? Because I got two that I want to bring up.
I got nothing, dude. It's like a 2-hour show.
Let's bring up one. Red Notice on Netflix. I watched it this week. That's the Ryan Reynolds, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Gal Gadot.
Oh, yeah. How was that? I've seen the previews.
I give it a 2.75 out of 5.
Okay, so nope.
It's worth watching.
Okay.
And it, spoiler alert, it sets itself up for a sequel.
Okay.
I could see them do better things with it. They are essentially just establishing three characters.
Okay.
If you like Ryan Reynolds in every movie where he's snarky, you'll like him in this. If you like movies where there's a lot of swerves, you'll like it, although... They both pull.
Well, is Vince Russo writing this script over here?
A lot of double crosses and triple crosses. And although I don't think they pull it off fine, it's just not as entertaining as like a Ocean's 11. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
But it is Reynolds. I'll say this: it's almost worth a 3 because of Reynolds and Rock when they're in scenes together.
I can see that being fun.
Just very fun.
Yeah.
It's well worth watching. And hopefully it's good enough that I will like a sequel.
Okay.
The other thing I have, and it's not something that you have watched, but I'll tell you this. I almost feel bad for liking this show as much as I have because, like everything in this world where we mentioned earlier, you can't talk about I don't want to talk about politics, but you always get sucked in. The far right loves the show Yellowstone.
I want to try it.
It's so good that I had to go buy this bottle, and I will only drink it on Sundays now that the I'm pointing to a bottle of Yellowstone straight bourbon.
I don't think that's bad.
Dude, it's so good. And this season's debut, the first episode and the second episode, it's so far, this is the third season. There's not been one disappointment. Not one.
It's on my radar. Kelly and I finished Ted Lasso, and I've been like, we need to start watching something together again, and I've thrown that out there. I've also thrown out...
it's going to get rough.
Have you watched... I guess it just debuted yesterday, so you probably haven't. Or maybe it was last week.
Mary Kingstone?
No, the Psychiatrist Next Door or whatever it is.
Oh, I'm going to watch it.
Okay, I want you to. And
I'm going
to
watch
it. I haven't really read the reviews.
Someone
on
said,
it.
Jeremy, they're going to do a show and it's going to have Will Ferrell and Paul Rudd. What do you think? I'm like, well, I'll take my money.
Yeah. Like, I'll take it. Yeah. I think that would be right up our alley.
Let me rephrase this. Jeremy, they're going to do something with Paul Rudd. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm in.
The Sexiest Man Alive.
Paul Rudd's Sexiest Man Alive. Yeah. Paul Rudd. Yeah. About to debut in Ghostbusters this week. Which could bring me to the third thing we talk about. We are going to have a special episode Sunday, and I'm warning you now, it's going to be spoiler-filled. Shane, sorry, Matt F. Bowsler, Shane of the Rock Paper Podcast invited me to go watch a show with
him.
Is
that rivalry still a thing?
It'll never not be a thing. It's Piper Hogan, man. We're going to go see it at 12:30 at the Super Deluxe at Mid Rivers, and then we're going to come back here.
What does Super Deluxe mean?
The bigger theater, bigger screen.
Ooh.
Bigger screen, and they serve you food and drinks while you're sitting there.
How is the food?
Applebee's quality.
Gets the job done.
Yeah, yeah. The fact that you can order it from your chair is good.
Just reheated from Cisco.
I'm just going to order a beer or two.
Yeah, we have some chicken wings too, man.
Not a spoiler, but just fun fact. My third quarter bonus hits this Friday, so I'm going to go all out at the theater. So we're going to go watch that with Shane of Rock Picker Podcast, and we're going to come back here and we're going to record the most spoiler-centric episode we've ever done, probably, and we're going to talk about it. And that'll be our next week's episode.
Awesome, man.
And we'll promote Debstock, which is the foundation that Shane created for his mom who passed away.
Now, will this be the third annual Debstock?
Second.
Okay.
Second, he did one and he thought it was a 1-0 off, but this one, they come back. He didn't do one during the COVID.
Okay.
So, yeah. So,
so I had my years right.
You're good. I think we're done. We went 1 hour and 58 minutes with a break.
With a break.
For you to pee about wrestling.
Yeah.
Out there the disclaimer.
There's going to be no... Yeah, you know what? It's not going to be our most downloaded and listened episode, but if you like wrestling at all...
Here's the thing about the Pop Culture Bombcast. We're a potpourri of information.
We bring everything to the table.
We've got something for everybody. And we've got... Sometimes, by doing that, we'll alienate certain people. This episode might have alienated people, but I can tell you this. There's going to be a lot of wrestling fans that we're going to tag AEW in every fucking thing I post. We might get new fans.
Ooh.
I know. And we got a lot of stuff coming up. I mean,
What's our average downloads these days?
We'll talk about that off the air. But
whatever it is, double. I will get a silver badge or a luchasaur.
And we just talked about one thing we didn't talk about in this throw it to Missy. We just watched the Spider-Man No Way Home second trailer, which was fucking great.
It looked good. I had questions.
We got a lot of things to talk about going in the future, so hang tight. Wrestling will not be all of it, but I'm happy we did it this time.
And we'll do more. Hey, you know what we need to do?
Play a game.
We need to play a game, of course, but we also need to do a live show at the new Shamrocks.
We do. Spoiler alert, we've got one coming. We just haven't picked a date. Kyle actively told me, he texted me and said, let's do a show. So we're going to do that. We got a lot of stuff coming. Speaking of games, I kickstarted, and it should be here anytime soon, a new drinking fantasy game.
Yeah, the last one was rough.
This one, though, your glass is your lifeline. You drink down to the level, and if you get levels, they add it. So once your glass is gone, you're dead. So it'll be fun.
That is fun.
Yeah, it'll be fun. All that's in the future, though. For now, though, there's absolutely no one else in this room but me.
In a very rare occasion. Let's go, Blue!
And I'm going to play our music.
I know how to hit the keys.
Not doing so good here lately, huh?
High five.
Like, Blues. They started good.
Yeah, it's
okay. Hey, what?
Still be going.
That makes sense. All right, we're done.